now here we are. You know, we didn't simulate this. We didn't practice.
On behalf of our partners in the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
So both the health policies and economic policies, we find ourselves in uncharted territory.
It's become clear that people in this country and globally have been steamrolled. It is also clear that it has been coordinated globally. It is also clear that it has been integrated, not just over 6 months, not just over 2.5 years, but it has been planned over decades. The changes to legislation in this country were done so that they could control doctors and people. We know and we knew that this is all bullshit and that we've been had. But we are going to hound you down, the people that are guilty. We are going to hound you down and hold you accountable, and we will expose your global agenda.
Ever wonder how a full-spectrum pandemic response apparatus, vaccines, surveillance, grids, massive financing streams, and unaccountable governance seem to materialize overnight in 2020 as if it had been sitting on an Event 201 tabletop exercise waiting for the right crisis?
We have to put in place an infrastructure, not just here at home, but globally, that allows us to see it quickly, isolate it quickly, respond to it quickly, so that if and when a new strain of flu, like the Spanish flu, crops up 5 years from now or a decade from now, we've made the investment.
The blueprint wasn't born in haste during COVID. Roots trace back much earlier, buried in documents from the now-released Jeffrey Epstein files. A 14-page J.P. Morgan Chase proposal known as Project Molecule, crafted in collaboration with the Gates Foundation, an outline of a permanent privately controlled transnational entity designed to govern biological interventions across sovereign borders. It proposed a self-perpetuating structure with offshore arms, donor anonymity, and billions funneled into vaccines and surveillance, all shielded from public oversight or electoral accountability. Thanks in large part to the research done by Sire G, we now know the proposed power players read like a globalist who's who. These were overlords steering nations, institutions, and capital flows. Now they were being positioned to oversee biology itself. No term limits, no FOIA, no voters to answer to. That same year, 2011, the CIA ran a fake hepatitis vaccination campaign to hunt bin Laden's DNA, an op that blew up trust in foreign health programs and got workers killed. Yet, here was J.P. Morgan and Gates proposing to bankroll foreign-funded biosurveillance in the exact same terrain, engineered by the same elite network Epstein was coaching behind the scenes.
But I can tell you that with the money I gave to help try to eradicate polio in Pakistan and India, instead of asking me whether that money should be given to these children for vaccines, I think you might want to ask their mothers who received the vaccine, who know their child now won't get polio, and ask them if Epstein should have helped these people.
Project Molecule didn't plan the pandemics, but it did organize eugenics into an investable, governable asset class, all fused under private mandates with zero built-in checks against self-interest. The real question isn't what did they do with that power, it's what mechanism exists to stop them from abusing it today. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
All right, folks, that is the latest from John Bound. Find and share that video, as always, at InfoWars.com, band.video, and, of course, on our X platforms at Real Alex Jones, at InfoWars, at AJN Live. We got a lot of stuff coming up today. Just a infinite number of videos to show you, including addresses by Donald Trump, Alex Jones on the Patrick Bet David podcast, as well as multiple hearings featuring Keith Ellison, amongst others, including ICE officials. So very big day today. Tons of clips to get to. Your calls as well. Stay tuned. It's the War Room, InfoWars.com, band.video. Share those links.
And entire world is racing into the fourth turning and the greatest quickening our species has seen in 10,000 years of recorded history. You know you're in a war, right? And it's a declared war. The globalists have declared war on Team Humanity. They've declared war on the God that made us. It is not incredible. It is not heroic. It is not amazing to fight this. It is survival. This is the priority. This is the real world. This is game time. This is the crossroads of human destiny right now. Right now. And I see a bunch of other people not realizing how desperate the situation is. We need maximum urgency. We're up against the most evil people the world's ever seen. Don't you understand that? I don't want anybody to go out and be physically violent. I want you to kill with truth. Kill with your will. Kill, kill, kill their lies.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, band.video. Please do share those links. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. We got a very big show for you today. Tons of videos to get to, including some clips from Alex Jones of the Patrick Bet David podcast, where he is today and just came out. Whole thing is absolutely bombshell. He addresses a lot of the issues that we'll be talking about today, including the fallout to Pam Bondi's frankly disastrous testimony yesterday in front of the Congress. There are a couple other big hearings going on today, including with Keith Ellison. I'll show you some pretty interesting exchanges there. But I think we'll start with Alex Jones on the Patrick Bet David podcast, clip number one. This is Alex Jones responding to Pam Bondi's testimony yesterday. It's a bit of a longer clip, but I may let the whole thing play here because the whole thing's good. But this is just a piece of the Patrick Bet David interview with Alex Jones from earlier today. Let's watch.
What is the risk for Bondi to speak to them?
Again, I want to be clear. I'm trying to show people the different angles of the 35,000-foot view. I think Bondi's handled this terribly. I believe they are involved in a cover-up, which has led them right into this disaster. And I'm going to answer your question, but first I want to say this. That's why Trump has to go there with all the human sacrifice, with the blood drinking, with the black magic on the blackboard, with the buried bodies, with the buying babies, with the disappearing children, and it's all Democrats connected to it. Instead, as Bondi said in the hearing yesterday, she said it'll bring down the stock market if this is known. I've said that about 500 times. Not that I agree with that, but I've been told right before Trump got reelected, they said, listen, Mossad, British intelligence, CIA ran this. It's really a giant money laundering operation, which we already knew. Yeah. Mike Benz has proven. Trump believes that it's also cold. There's no way to prove it. The Democrats have had the file. They're going to twist it. He's been convinced it's all disaster. It's old news. It's designed to be a tar baby, which it is. So he's going to say, let's just move on. But I explained at the time, and I've told the White House this, you can't. It's a trap. This is how the people that are guilty trick you into becoming an accomplice and then manage it and turn it around and politically destroy you. And then, of course, none of the truth ever comes out. It's all a giant smokescreen of garbage and fake AI and the rest of it. So I was just simply bringing that clip up, not to obfuscate from the clip, that's why I raised it, but to say here's the other layers to it that are going on. Now, to answer your other question, yes, this looks absolutely horrible. She looks like a deer in the headlights. She looks like she has a gun to her head. Like when we saw Bongino and Patel 11 months ago get up on Fox, they go, I know we said there were another shooter in Pennsylvania. There wasn't. Epstein acted alone. In fact, he wasn't even a child trafficker, and he had no accomplices. And he killed himself. And the Easter Bunny is real. And everybody turned against him because we'd already studied it. We knew it wasn't true. Plus, it was a 180. So it's the same thing. It looks terrible. It is terrible. It's hurting Trump really bad. It's hurting America. And again, my frustration is it lets the Democrats, who are the ones that are really guilty, if you look at the evidence, pretend that it's Trump and the Republicans that are the pedo protection party. And notice they're not going to the, you know, the big reports of top Democrats and people raping kids and all the witnesses and everything. They're focusing on Lutnick, which is fine. Luttening obviously was in business with him, obviously moved in next door to him, lied and said he only saw him once and thought he was a creep and ran out of his house with his wife, and then a couple years later, he's out at his island with his kids. Okay, yeah, yeah, no. But Luttening's never been implicated in any of the illegal stuff. Fine. Fire Luttening, or if you found him in a crime, indict him. But let's spend as much time on the hardcore cannibalism, Satanism, human trafficking, buying, selling children, and ooh, that's Democrats.
They're not there yet. They're not there yet, by the way. Doesn't seem like they're there yet. This is the clip I think you were talking about, Rob. You may want to fast forward to the part.
Jump in here whenever you want.
No, I get that. Go for it, Rob. When he starts saying, yeah, go ahead.
He killed himself. I've seen the whole file. He killed himself.
This is the clip you were talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, a part of it for me, yesterday I watched a Bondi hearing, and I asked myself, I couldn't find one clip that made her look good. Not one. Typically, these hearings, you know, you'll say, okay, she won this one, they won this one, this was even, this was whatever, nobody won here, she took this one. I don't know if I found the clip. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, the whole fighting back and pushing back and all that stuff, was that present? Sure. Asking Jasmine Crockett, you know, she goes for 5 minutes, doesn't ask a single question, you know, or the other lady who doesn't bring up Hakeem Jeffries or calling out a lot of these people, that's great. There's a part of it that some people are speculating. Tell me what you think about this, where the DOJ or the AG was monitoring what the representatives were searching when they were going to look at the Epstein files. I don't know if you saw that or not. Rob, do you have that?
I'll find it.
There's a story going around that they were actually monitoring what these representatives were searching when they went to look at Epstein files. What do you know about that story?
Oh, I'll guarantee you that was going on. I mean, I haven't seen the story, but of course they were. Everything in those computers is being monitored and there's a record of it.
So meaning if I'm whoever I am, I'm going to go out.
It's just like when you search your own files or you search Google. You're there searching a private database at the DOJ. Of course, they know who logs in, this congressperson, and then now they know what they're going to look at. They have a record of it.
So they know exactly what you're looking at. Why would they want to know what you're looking at?
I mean, by default, that's the way computers work. I don't know if that story is particularly true. I just know that's the way computers work.
Yeah, where is that story that Rob that's saying that happened?
Right here. This is Representative Nancy Mace of South Carolina said full release of the names of the Epstein files would shock the world. And then there is an article here this morning. Justice Department tracking which Epstein files lawmakers are searching for, opening, and reviewing. According to this is Nancy Mace as well.
Yeah, that's a 2-month-old story as well on what they're looking at. I guess it makes sense to see what person's story they're interested in. The other part of it is...
No. I mean, it means the watchers are, who's going to watch the watchers? And so, I agree it's Big Brother. I'm just saying by the very nature of it, they have the technology, so I'm sure they are monitoring what they're watching.
I would assume this is something both sides probably do. The other part of it is, you know the Dems, they only want one person. They want Trump, right? They want to get Trump. You know, this has been going on under 4 presidents that people have been looking at. Why is it that it's fallen on this administration's mishandling of the files? Because right now the left is running with this. They're saying they're hiding it. Massey and Rokana are coming together. This is not a good look on the current administration.
Well, you just nailed it. But going back to your last thing you said about Bonnie, and then I'll cover that, if I may. Even Senator Kennedy, who's a Republican and likes her, he had to tear her up on Epstein. I mean, so even Senator Kennedy had to nail her. And that's because she's been sent in there to sell something that isn't going to sell. And everybody keeps blaming her and blaming even Todd Blanche, who, by the way, doesn't like me. I'm not defending him. They're following Trump's directives. And I said this, you know, a year ago when the cover-up started, and it's been since confirmed. So it's Trump that thinks it's a distraction and a diversion and tar baby, which it is. But it doesn't matter because, exactly, the Democrats never wanted to touch it. They covered it up. They controlled the files. That's why there's all these clips going around I saw today of Don Lemon, just 3 years ago going, how dare the Republicans try to investigate the Epstein files? This is bigoted and this is horrible and this is, you know, crazy and this is terrible. So, yeah, and that's what Trump should be pointing out. You're the pedo party. You're the sexualized kids party. It's all the Democrats that are in these files. But because there are so many big bankers and British royalty and all of it, he has been told. That's what I was told. Again, I've said this probably 100 times. I said Trump has been convinced that it will crash the economy if all these bankers and people, if this stuff comes out, and he thinks and justifies the means, it's too dangerous. And look, Trump, I'm not pushing this. I'm saying let's look at his perspective. The carbon taxes have been estimated by top experts that they put them in the next decade to kill 2 billion people by starvation or war. Okay, Trump just got us out of the Paris Accord. They've secured the border. They found half of the 500,000 missing children. They've got no tax on tips. The economy is starting to turn around. It goes on and on and on and on and on. Getting men out of women's sports, exposing the NGOs, the election fraud. I mean, it's great. That's why it's paradoxical. I want Trump to succeed. But he has to understand that this has become a litmus test.
They're not going to win here if they continue going this way. If they continue fighting, opening it up, this is just going to make it seem like they're hiding something more and more and more. Guys, you've been asking this for a long time. It's official.
All right, Alex, folks, that is just a clip from Alex Jones's Patrick Bet David interview that he did earlier today. And, of course, he breaks down what's going on with Bondi and Trump and the Epstein files. I think he's exactly right. And I think we actually have confirmation of what we've been supposing this whole time. Now, it gets a little bit confusing because it's like, yes, they're following Trump's orders. I think Nick Fuentes even, spoke on this yesterday where it's just like, just the way Pam Bondi responds was very Trumpian. She was probably being coached by Trump, or at least was trying to, on her own volition, adopt some of Trump's mannerisms. It could have been either way. But Trump is the head of the snake at this point, unfortunately. That being said, it's obvious that he is being gatekept from the information. As we've been saying the whole time, anytime anybody would ask me about what's going on with Trump, it's like, I just don't think he knows what's going on. I think he has a very narrow view of what is actually contained in the Epstein files. And I think the people around him are isolating him from the truth and are just telling him, oh, this is all about getting you. You just have to defend yourself and just keep pointing out that you're not in the files because this is all about you. And it's not all about him. But he's being held from the real information of what's going on. And I think we actually have confirmation of that now, as Donald Trump gave a press conference today and took some questions. And one of the questions was just that. Clip number 8 here is President Donald Trump being asked if he was aware of Howard Lutnick's interactions with Jeffrey Epstein. Let's watch.
Please. Commerce visited Epstein's Island, and do you continue to have
no questions? I wasn't aware of it. No, I didn't. I actually haven't spoken to him about it. I wasn't, but from what I hear, he was there with his wife and children, and I guess in some cases some people were. I wasn't. I was never there. Somebody will someday say that I was never there.
I don't even know what he's saying. Someday somebody will say that. What? No, Howard Lutnick, you're Commerce Secretary, was there, and he lied about it a bunch of times. And he's not just visiting the island. He's going into business with Jeffrey Epstein 9 days later after visiting the island. So I think it's more or less confirmed. Like, we're right about what's going on here. They're keeping this from Donald Trump. He does not know what's in the Epstein files. He has no idea that the people around him are convicted in these files. He has no idea. He literally just thinks it's all about him. And is he not able to talk to anybody? I mean, I understand how maybe you could keep one guy isolated for a period of time. But like Don Jr. can't get in there. J.D. Vance can't get in there. Like, what is going on? Commerce Secretary confirms a meeting with the financier as Democrats question his credibility at Senate hearing. So the Trump administration is basically going down with this ship. Inexplicably, they're going down with this ship. And I think that's on purpose. I think it's all by design, actually. I think it's been decided that the Republican Party is an inconvenient barrier to the globalist plans, and so it's been slated for destruction. So it's now been saddled with the Epstein files. It's been saddled with supporting Israel endlessly as these two things become incredibly unpopular. The Republican Party is isolating itself and assigning itself the role of basically useless vestigial party is what we're becoming. And so, if this goes on like this, the Republicans will absolutely lose, no uncertain terms and lose so badly that, like, we'll never gain power again. We'll exist. The Republican Party will exist ostensibly as a perfunctory sort of opposition party to give the appearance of debate within a, in reality, totalitarian framework. But yeah, I think that's what's happening. And whether Trump is going along with that knowingly or unwittingly doesn't really matter, because it's happening and he's at the center of it. It's very annoying. It's actually just very annoying to have to sit back and watch as our country is destroyed. Like I said, we have a lot of hearings that have gone on recently with a lot of pretty interesting exchanges. And let's start with clip number two here, because Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison has been called up and is being forced to testify. And it is not going well for him because he's a criminal. Although the fact that he's still free, I guess, is a victory of its own in its own right. Let's go to clip number two here. This is Senator Ron Johnson questioning Minnesota AG Keith Ellison. Let's watch.
I, as a government official, would have said, back off. Let us work with ICE. Let's cooperate with him. Let's see if we can't de-escalate this. But Attorney General, you did the exact opposite. And two people are dead because you encouraged them to put themselves into harm's way. And now you're exploiting those two martyrs. That was a tragedy. It never should have happened. Now, we can investigate, but I can't imagine being a law enforcement official where I know my colleagues have been shot at, their vehicles rammed, that their trained activists deployed. And by the way, we know at least one of those activists had a semi-automatic pistol with extra clips. So now you're an ICE officer. You're doing enforcement action. You've got a team behind you trying to protect you. You've got all these trained activists behind you. Is it any wonder they're at hair trigger alert? A tragedy was going to happen, and you encouraged it. And you ought to feel damn guilty about it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, so Senator Johnson...
Smirk.
He's smirking.
Are you asking me for comment, Senator? Because everything you said was untrue. It was a nice theatrical performance, but it was all lies.
Senator Hassan.
You disgust me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson mouthing, "You disgust me," to him. And like, maybe Ron Johnson starting to realize it. He says, today, Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison admitted to knowing about the training of radical left agitators that impede law enforcement and put themselves in harm's way. As the state's chief law enforcement officer, he should prosecute obstruction of justice, not encourage and enable it. Oh, really? Is that right? Wait a second. You're telling me that the top cop, the attorney general of the state, is not supposed to encourage sedition and rebellion and riots attacking police officers? I'm sure once you inform him of this, he'll correct his ways. I'm sure this is a big mistake, right? He just hasn't thought about it yet. Now that you've introduced it to him, I'm sure he'll correct himself. Like, I'm glad Ron Johnson got a little angry at the end there. Because if there's one thing we all need to understand, it's that these people are evil. Like, really, genuinely, I'm not just saying, like, these people are evil. They know exactly what they're doing. It's why they're doing it. And so it's, and I'll show you the next clip and it gets even more crazy. But like, yeah, you can literally sit there and go, it's your fault. Two people are dead. You're encouraging this action. You clearly are just have completely abandoned any even semblance, even pretense to impartiality or just doing your job in a respectable, forthright way. And he just smirks in response, just pure disrespect. Like, they don't even pretend to be doing their job. It's not necessary to have them admit it. This is the thing I really need us to understand. They are never going to admit that they're wrong. Like, what are we doing here? Again, it's just, it's like We're dealing with the level of people that you find like committing murder in gang violence. You know, if you watch police interrogations, there's a very common strategy that they use. There's certain tactics that they use in interrogating people. And they'll actually sit there and be looking eye to eye with somebody who has himself spent the last 20 years routinely strangling hookers to death, right? It's like this person is just, they just need to be incinerated. Like there's no talking to them. There's no communicating with them, but they try and they sit there and they go, you know, your victims had families and they really need closure and they really want to know where the body of their daughter is. And the murderer looking back at him is just like, okay, tough crap. Like I'm not giving it. And it's like, what do you're trying to appeal to the humanity of a monster. You're trying to like invoke some sort of empathy from somebody who would sit there and just don it, just totally blank face, no emotion as they literally like strangle people with their own hands. That's the type of person we're dealing with here. The Keith Ellisons of the world. There's no convincing this person that what they've done is wrong. And in fact, when you try to do that, all you do is give them an opportunity to double down on what they're doing and provide an example to their followers, their constituents, that you can be this way. You can completely break the law. You can just be an open rebellion against the United States. And they won't do anything about it as long as you like act like what you're doing is good. So again, it's almost like worse that you're going to sit there and lay out all of the crap this guy did. And he's just going to smirk back at you and be like, you're lying. And I'll save the real powerful clip for in just a second, because I'll need to, you know, expand on it and talk about it quite a bit. But let's go to clip number 5 here, because this is Tom Homan announcing that they're now drawing down a lot of the ICE agents and federal agents out of Minnesota. And I got some crap about this on X. So I'm just like, this is a total failure. To me, this is a total capitulation to everything that the left demands. It is showing them and teaching them the mob tactics work. All you have to do is get a bunch of your, you know, radical psychopaths to attack the police for long enough in a persistent enough way, and eventually we'll give up and you'll win. That's obviously the message that's being expressed here, whether they want to acknowledge it or not. But a lot of people are going, oh, the, you know, panicking, whatever crap they say. And this is normal, actually. This is good that they're drawing it down. No, this is a total capitulation. You've got Keith Ellison and Tim Walz and Mayor Fry and everybody else in a leadership position in Minnesota still in positions of power, smirking and cockily acting like they've gotten one over on the federal government. And in all intents and purposes, they have. They should all be in jail. But here's Tom Homan.
With that, and success that has been made arresting public safety threats and other priorities since this surge operation began, as well as the unprecedented levels of coordination we have obtained from state officials and local law enforcement, I have proposed, and President Trump has concurred, that this surge operation conclude.
It's concluded. They did it. It's done, all right? They finished it. Okay, then again, we could go to clip 32, because this is what happened today. Let's go ahead and go to clip 32. Because you had an attempted ICE arrest of somebody who was caught trying to sell like 50 pounds of meth. And they were surrounded by liberal activists who were attacking them and blowing whistles because, no, the resistance hasn't stopped at all. No, they essentially won and have driven ICE out of the city because Trump's a coward.
Ladies and gentlemen, everything we've talked about to a T is being vindicated right now. So we can obsess over the Epstein files, or is Trump covering up, or isn't he, or you know, what's Todd Blanche doing, any of that.
Men that abuse these girls, and what does that mean?
But at the end of the day, it's 99% Democrats in there. It's the European elite. They're the ones that basically wrote the book on this crap. It's all coming out, and we the people, the populist Christians of the world, have been vindicated in spades. And that's why we've been attacked so much. So remember, regardless of what happens with different political leaders, different populists, whether it's Orban, or whether it's Le Pen in France, or whether it's Donald Trump here, regardless, we the people of the West, of America, Christendom, will continue to promote freedom and liberty and justice in the American way and expose evil. And at the tip of the spear in that fight is InfoWars. But regardless of what happens to InfoWars, TheAlexJonesStore.com is owned by Bickley, and they have set up the Alex Jones Network as our backup that is absolutely critical. And they have launched the biggest sale of the year that runs until just next Monday. So I'm saying this live on air on Tuesday, February 10th. And I'll air this later again as an ad, so you'll be seeing it later. That means you've only got 6 days to take advantage of this massive sale. Listen to this. We've got multiple bundles on the side of our best-selling products. Limited time till next Monday at midnight. And your support keeps us on the air. This is an amazing value. Ultimate Gut and Brain Bundle. Repair the gut, power the brain, the heart, everything. Bundle price, $99. Normal value, $209. Savings over 50% off. Includes bovine colostrum, the top. Private label, so incredible for your body, your skin, your hair, everything. Methylene blue tincture, we've got the best. Total game changer. You've seen the guests take it live on air. Even methylene blue fans say we've got the best. Methylene red is our proprietary system that doesn't have a bunch of methylene blue in it. It's got all these other supercharged nutrients that supercharge methylene blue, but also do a great job for your stamina, libido, energy outside of that. So if you love methylene blue, the methylene red, it's back in stock. All three of those together in a bundle at over 50% off. Then we have the Modern World Survival Stack. Rebuild, reload, defend. The bundle, $89. Normally $184. Over 50% off. Built to support the body, the toxic nutrient depleted modern world. Energy, stamina, focus, everything. Shilajit Complex, the best Shilajit gummies, capsules. You choose. CMOS capsules, incredible. Very strong, concentrated Irish CMOS. Natural iodine, 93 trace vitamins and minerals, incredible supercharger. You want this right now. Incredible for your thyroid, immune health, metabolic balance, your heart. And then Atomic Defense is the horse pill of horse pills of all the known concentrated natural detox, super nutrients to detox of heavy metals, environmental toxins, and supercharge your body and gut health. Get it all right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com and be the reason we will always be on the air one way or another. But you love sales. This one is over. I think it comes at like 57% off or something. This is over 50% off. It's running till next Monday. So I'm cutting this live on air on Tuesday, February 10th. So what is Monday? Okay. You got like 6 days to take action now at TheAlexJonesStore.com. And I want to thank all you that have gotten the products and all you that have been VIPs. You get huge discounts if you do that and $40 from the store instantly every month. But for everybody else on the fence, you're missing out. You think our info is powerful? Well, this is even more powerful. Get it now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
There's a little trick that hardened criminals know, and surprisingly effective. And it's just never, ever, 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 ever admit to anything ever. And it actually works a lot of time. These people don't, you know, they get put in a position and eventually they go, you know, it's better if I just confess. You know, they got all this on me. Maybe if I come clean, they'll go easy on me. And that never really works out. No, the real hardened criminals, the gangsters, the people that have been in and out of prison a million times, you can literally be showing them a picture of themselves doing the crime. They can have blood from the victims on their hands and they'll go, nah, I have no idea what that is. Never seen that before. And they just say, and it's convincing. And you're like, wait, but it's a picture. Like it's a skill I think they developed to a really high degree. And it's kind of baffling to honest people. Like I've experienced it in my own life where I caught a dude at a party stealing stuff out of my room. And he just looked me in the eye and went, no, I didn't. No, I was looking for Greg. There's no one named Greg here, jackass. But they'll just lie straight to your face. So that's what we're about to witness. We're about to witness
like a hardened criminal. His name's Keith Ellison. He's the Attorney General of Minnesota. And he's about to be presented, and he knows this exists. What I just described, not video evidence, but audio evidence of exactly what he's being accused of. And yet, he just denies it. It's not something you can deny. It's on film. Like, we don't need your acquiescence or denial. It is actually just self-evident that it is, in fact, true. But he continues to deny it. So, like, I have a short version of this clip. I think I'm going to play the longer one, right? We have 9 and 9B. These are kind of the same, right? One's 1 minute. One is 7 minutes. I think we got to go to the 7 minute one. So I think you got to see the level. I was just during the break, like, I got a pretty big vocabulary and I'm missing words. I'm missing words that are needed to describe what we're witnessing here. Petulant might be one of them. Disrespect is a good catch all for what we're about to witness. And it's just the basic, I guess disrespect is just the best word. Just that as you watch this, I personally feel like we're being slapped in the face, like spit in the face, verbally, mentally, by this Keith Ellison figure. And yet, you can sort of see it run up against, just like we just saw with Ron Johnson, this sort of old school mindset of like, hey, dude, we caught you. You need to like justify this. And it runs up against just basic petulant disrespect of just like, no, you didn't. Like, no, we did. You need to explain this. He's just like, no, you didn't. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's infuriating. Let's go to it. Clip number 9B, the Minnesota Attorney General perjured himself when Josh Hawley asked about campaign donations that he took. And, you know, maybe I'll bring in the audio just because, but everything Josh Hawley says is exactly 100% true. We can actually show you the audio. I've played it before on this show. Keith Ellison was absolutely caught conspiring with the very people that stole billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars from the state of Minnesota because he told them that he would stop the investigations into them. This is cut and dry. We have all of the evidence. So why is he not in prison? Well, let's go to Josh Hawley questioning him.
Mr. Ellison, let me start with you. You're the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota. Do I have that correct? That's a yes.
Sir, you're aware of my job. You know the answer to that.
You're not going to answer my questions? Are we going to start this way? Are you the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota, yes or no?
You know the answer.
Jeez. Mr. Ellison, you're in my courtroom now. You're under oath. So I suggest that you answer my questions. Are you the Chief Law Enforcement Officer of the state of Minnesota, yes or no? Let's try another question. Are you familiar with the $9 billion in historic fraud out of your state?
So at that point, so this is the point where if Keith Ellison, who is in fact acting like a child, was in fact a child, you would walk over and slap him in the face. You'd smack him in the back of the head. Go, let's try this again. Are you the Attorney General? I think, yes, I am. Okay, well, great. Wasn't that easy? Wasn't that nice and easy? Can't do that because Keith Ellison, again, I guess it's sort of a mixture. Hardened criminal on one side, but also petulant child. It's like the poem, The White Man's Burden. Half devil and half child. That's who we're dealing with. Both viciously evil, cunning, conniving, but also just like a petty little bitch. Let's go back to Keith Ellison's back it up about 15 seconds. Again, the answer would be yes. Yes, I'm the Attorney General. Let's continue. Can't even do that. Let's
watch. The Chief Law Enforcement Officer of the state of Minnesota? Yes or no? Let's try another question. Are you familiar with the $9 billion in historic fraud out of your state, including the $250 million in the Feeding Our Future program alone? Are you familiar with that? Don't turn to the pages in your book to get your potted answers. Are you familiar with it? Yes or no?
Yes, I am familiar with it.
Very familiar, aren't you? Because the people who ran the Feeding Our Futures program came to you in your official office in the state capitol December 11th, 2021, and asked for your help in getting investigators off their backs. They complained to you for upwards of an hour about state investigators going after them, and they begged you to help them, and you agreed to it, amazingly. And we know you did.
That's not
because
true.
It's all caught on tape.
Yeah,
every single sentence is caught on tape. Here's what you said. Let's
and
take a look.
You
said, it's not a question. You said to them, send me the names of all these folks who are investigating them. You said to them, send me their names. And I'll take that list and I'll call the person over at education who is investigating them and say, what's going on? Why am I getting these complaints? Then he went on to say, I already have my team working on this. What day should we get together to discuss it again? You made pledge after pledge to them. You said, we've got to make sure this guy who's investigating them stops it. You said, you have my attention. I'm concerned about this. You said, let's go fight these people, meaning the people who were investigating the fraud. Why'd you do it? Why'd you help them?
Are you going to let me answer?
Please. We're all ears.
So first of all, you're cherry picking quotes out of there.
Why did you help them?
I thought you were going to let me answer.
Why did you help
them? Are you going to let me answer?
Why did you help
them? You let me answer and I'll answer you.
Tell the truth and I'll let you answer.
I will tell the truth.
Good.
Let's do that.
That'd be a nice change. Why did you help them?
Now see, Mr. Chairman, I didn't come here to be insulted. I came here voluntarily.
You came here for the truth. Let's have it. Why did you help them? The quotes are here. They're in black and white, and every member of this audience can listen to the recording. It's 54 minutes long. It's all in public. You can Google it right now and listen to it.
Right, and listen to it all.
Why did you help them?
First of all, I didn't help them.
You did help them.
No, I did not. I certainly didn't.
You're saying you didn't do anything for them. You didn't.
Well, wait a minute.
I already have my team working on this again. That's not you.
My team assisted with the information that led to the prosecution and conviction of these people.
No, you didn't. You didn't lift a finger to prosecute them. No, you did not.
No, because
they were
a federal prosecution.
You had BS. You had whistleblowers come to you as early as 2019.
You're the one talking BS.
Hey, listen, it's my time.
Doesn't know what you're talking about, sir.
Oh, no, sir. You now have encountered the truth and you don't like it. Why'd you take their money? Why'd you take their money?
I didn't.
You took $10,000.
No, that's a false statement.
$10,000 9 days after the meeting.
False statement.
You took $10,000. Here's what happened. They went to your office.
That's a false statement.
They solicited money from you. They solicited help from you.
That's also wrong.
They came to your office.
No,
it was your official office. You met with them for 54 minutes.
No, they didn't.
They asked you for help. You pledged it to them and they talked repeatedly about money. In fact, it's all they talked about.
That's a lie.
Money, 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 money. They said, we'll put our dollars in the right place. We will support candidates that will fight to protect our interests. You replied, that's right. They said, if you are securing your donor base and securing your power base, you can act the way you want. You replied, money is freedom. They said the amount of money I'm reading the transcript. The amount of money circulating in our community today is powerful. And we haven't realizing it in a meaningful way. And you said, give me the specifics. And 9 days later, you took $10,000 from people who were then indicted. It's in your reports. Why'd you do it?
Sir,
was it worth it?
You know what? This is a theatrical performance.
This is the truth.
It
this is what accountability looks like, of which you've had none.
You helped
fraudsters defraud your state and this government of $9 billion, and you got a fat campaign contribution out of it. You ought to be indicted.
True. Well,
that's the truth.
I think we've made the point. Let's keep the tenor.
Well,
just
for the record,
I'll ask how I
he's
want.
He's lying, and that's the truth.
Oh no, this is all on the record,
sir.
Did you bother to investigate where the money that you facilitated their fraud for, where it went? Do you know where it went, what it was used for, the fraudulent money? I do, because we just heard testimony about it yesterday.
Because we
the
were
funds
key
went
players
to
in the
hundreds of millions of dollars to terrorist groups, to transnational criminal organizations, to the drug trade, to drug trafficking, to child trafficking. And you took $10,000.
That's a lie.
And helped them do it. You know, the other thing is, whistleblowers came to you as early as 2019. Let's look. As early as 2019, whistleblowers, don't talk over me.
No,
as early as 2019, it's my hearing, pal. As early as 2019.
Don't call me pal.
Whistleblowers came to, well, I should call you a prisoner because you ought to be in jail.
Well, we'll see what you can do.
In 2019, whistleblowers came to you in your office and referred to you fraud allegations from Feeding Our Futures, and you blew them off. Listen, your own state newspaper
investigated
it. The Minnesota Star Tribune, the Partners in Nutrition, brought its concerns to the Attorney General's office in 2018 and in 2019, and you did nothing. You did nothing for years. The only action you took is, once all these fraudsters came to your office and asked you to get involved and offered you money,
did not come to
then
my
you got
office.
Involved.
They
then you
not,
took the money, and then you got involved.
They did not come to my office. You're completely wrong about that.
You met with him for 54 minutes, and you took $10,000, and they also gave your family money. They gave your family thousands of dollars in campaign contributions in addition to what they gave you.
This is a false statement.
Let's put the
this is completely untrue.
The New York Post.
Yeah, we know the New York Post.
Minnesota Keith Ellison, AG, accepted campaign donations from individuals linked to the $250 million COVID fraud scheme after they were in your office.
Not,
the donations came on December 20th.
Sir,
you met with
not,
them on December the 11th, and on January 20th, the FBI knocked over their headquarters.
No, no.
That's the sequence of events here.
No, it's not.
You've been right at the center of this fraud
thing
from the beginning, and you've enabled it. And sir,
the false
you
statement.
Should resign.
And sir, you should resign. I was thinking the same thing about you.
Should resign.
All right. So I figured I'd let that whole thing play just so you could see what we're dealing with here. I don't understand. Like, I don't understand what we're doing. Everything Josh Hawley said is absolutely verifiable, 100% true. There may be a discrepancy of like where they actually met, because I think Ellison went to them instead of them going to Ellison. So I think him saying they came to your office, he went to their office, I think, is the way I remember, which I think is why Ellison was like, nope, never came to my office, never happened, never came to my, as if that's what matters, as if it matters where the conversation happened. The conversation happened, and the conversation was him meeting with people who would later be charged and convicted for massive amounts of crime, siphoning away government money. And he's there saying the investigations into you will stop if you donate to me. Then they donate to him. Then he stops the investigation. Why are we presenting this to him and not a jury and judge? Like, that's what I don't understand. What are we doing here? What Josh Hawley just laid out, again, incontrovertible. Keith Ellison can keep saying, no, it didn't. And it's just like, but why are we even letting him talk? It doesn't matter what he says. We have all of the proof we could ever possibly need. Why is he even allowed to respond? Why is he not being charged? Why is all of this evidence not being presented to a law court so that he can be convicted for the crime that he committed and continues to commit? And him lying about it, as you just saw, is just another crime on top of all the other crimes. He, without a doubt, just committed perjury there. Every time he denied something that is not, he's not able to deny. We actually have the recorded evidence of him saying the things that Josh Hawley was quoting verbatim from a transcript. Do you understand what I'm talking about here? Josh Hawley reads a verbatim transcript that we have the audio of, and Keith Ellison just says, I didn't say that. No, but you did. So like, so why are we, why, so what are we doing? So what are we doing here? He's just denying reality. And it's like, he's going to get away with it. Because he just refuses to acknowledge what he did. Our criminal justice system is not set up to require the admission of the guilty. Do we understand that? That every criminal, pretty much, 90% of them, never admit what they're going to do. They always claim that they're, you know, being railroaded, that they're being framed. They always do. The beauty, the brilliance, I mean, this is genius of our justice system. It doesn't matter. We don't require the people to admit what they've done. You just convict them on the preponderance of evidence, which is exactly what we have. More than you could ever want. Again, it's like, what are we doing here? Just any other crime. Does this make any sense at all? That you would pull somebody in and go, look, we've got you on video planning the attack. We've got you on video carrying out the attack. We got you on audio afterwards describing what it was like during the attack. And the person's just like, no, I wasn't there. I didn't do the attack. It's just like, okay, guilty. You go to jail now. Tell the story to your cellmate about how you're innocent because you're actually guilty and we don't care what you say. So like, that's, I guess, the whole thing about this. And it was like really hard for me not to interrupt, but it was better that I don't, because literally the only thing I think should happen to Keith Ellison from here on out, not fit for air on the radio. Emails, audio show, Minnesota officials ignored warnings, fraudster's attorney. There's so many examples, even just that transcript of what he did. He ignored whistleblower complaints that he knew were accurate. He probably used those whistleblower complaints to go to the people and went, hey, you know, there are whistleblowers blowing the whistle on your whole gig. I can make it go away, but you got to make it worth my while. Remember, it's not about the money either. He's meeting with the Somalis because the Somalis vote as a bloc and their leadership instructs them who to vote for, and they all 100% follow those instructions. So by getting them to go along with Keith Ellison, Keith Ellison has just secured his election because they have a monolithic voting bloc that always votes how the leadership says. So all you have to do is make a deal with the leadership and you have just secured your election. You don't even have to worry about doing anything else. As long as you support and protect the criminal scammers, then you'll be guaranteed your position because they've imported so many of them that it acts as a bloc swing vote. Representative Ilhan Omar, any link between alleged Somali fraud and terrorism would be a failure of the FBI. Yeah, that's, again, it's like, these are not even sophisticated criminals. Everything we're seeing is just straight up ghetto trash excuses that thugs and gangsters use. Oh, you got caught? Well, this is the police's fault. It's the police's fault for not stopping me from doing this. That's what Ilhan Omar is saying. And she said it multiple times. Like, it isn't even a one-off. This is actually how their brains work, folks. This is actually who we're dealing with. Oh, yeah, I received $50,000, not just $10,000. AG Keith Ellison, his councilman's son, Mayor Jacob Frey, Representative Ilhan Omar, and others all received cash from the scammers who siphoned off some $250 million, largely through nonprofit Feeding Our Future. Many did so after meeting the crooks, raising questions about how much they knew. It's not questions about how much. Should we go to the – I dropped the audio in. We can go to the audio. It's in the show folder. I mean, it's undeniable. Let's just do that. Let's do that. Bring in the audio. We'll show you the Keith Ellison clip just so we don't have to speculate at all. And I believe these are the two correct ones. American Experiment exclusive. And we can pull up the original article from it too. Like, what are we doing? Like, honestly, what are we doing? This man should be tarred and feathered. This man should be immediately kicked out of office and he should be tried and convicted of bribery and sent to jail. What are we doing? We're just going to present him all of the information of him being guilty, but as long as he doesn't admit it, he's free to go? What? What are we doing? So I don't understand the political structure that we have where the worst thing that can happen to a Democrat politician is that they get to sit in front of Republicans and smirk and giggle at them as the Republicans flail impotently. Like, that's it. That's our fix to this. We have him dead to rights on audio tape, conspiring with the people that stole billions and billions of dollars. And the worst thing that can happen to him is he might not get reelected. But here's the problem. The majority of his constituency are the Somalis that are all in on the scams. And so they just keep voting. Like, I think democracy's broken. I think it's broken in any normal situation at all. The people of a country, when they found out that their leadership had been in collaboration with, in cahoots with people stealing billions of dollars from them, they wouldn't vote for that person anymore, because typically people don't like having billions of dollars stolen from them, and they don't like the authorities who have been empowered to stop fraud participating in the fraud. I know this is weird, I have to explain it, but normally people wouldn't vote for this guy over and over. But when that critical mass is reached, when more than half of your population are in fact just like criminals themselves and vote for the guy that is in league with the criminals because it means that they're safer, like, what do you do? What do you do? And if our only solution to this is to give him a finger wagging and then say, on your way, sir, I think the government is not fit for purpose anymore. Again, do we have to, like, who do we have to convince? Who do we have to convince? Typically, I think the structure would be a judge, a grand jury, a jury of his peers. Like, can we make this argument to them rather than to Keith Ellison? Because I understand that what Josh Hawley is doing is making the argument to the American people. The problem is the vast majority of American people are not listening, not paying attention, will never see this testimony. And even if they did, are so biased and partisan and screwed up from the rest of the misinformation, they think Keith Ellison is like a freedom fighter or something. Can somebody explain this to me? Could somebody explain to me, like, what the value of Keith Ellison is, why anybody would ever vote for him? The only reason is because you're a criminal and he's letting you get away with it. It's the only reason I could possibly imagine. Were we able to bring in those audio clips? All right, let's go to clip two. Let's see what is contained in that.
But we want to get really specific here. And I work in the political field and I understand very well how all this operates. And if I want to be frank, and I think everyone in this room wants to be frank, and this is a safe space, we're a collective in that sense. There is a fight, there's a battle in this state, as well as in this country, for communities that look like us, having to fight to protect and keep what we have. And the only way we can protect what we have is by inserting ourselves into the political arena, putting our votes where it needs to be, but most importantly, putting our dollars in the right place and supporting candidates that will fight to protect our interests.
That's right.
You can only protect our interests when we have your back and you don't have to worry about who's behind you. Right? And we have to be frank and honest. You are dealing with market forces and political situations, and you have to operate in the best manner that you can operate in the state, with your donors, with your power base. But if you are secure in your donor base, and if you are secure in your power base, you can act the way you want to act.
Money is freedom. So
and our community, our business owners, we are not the same community as 25 years ago. The amount of money circulating in our community today is powerful. And we haven't really harnessed it in a very meaningful way to support people at the highest level and ensure that they are comfortable and safe, knowing that they can advocate for our communities without regard to your next fundraiser, acting in the best interests of the community. And for example, right now, one of the biggest issues facing in our community is the CACFP program.
So I'll show you the other clip on the other side where, again, they get even more into it. But that was one that was quoted by Josh Hawley, and you heard it was exactly verbatim what Josh Hawley said. And in response to Josh Hawley quoting him verbatim, Keith Ellison said, nope, didn't happen. I never said that. You just heard it. That was him talking to people who they're saying our businesses, our community, our interests. When they're saying that, what they're describing are the massive billion-dollar scams that they were running for years and that Keith Ellison knew about because a whistleblower had told him about it. Then he goes and meets with the people, and they say for our interests to be maintained, I guess, you know, you need some support and we can really guarantee that you have that position, but we need to know our interests are secured. The interests they're talking about are the fraud rings that stole billions of dollars. So I'll show you on the other side how Keith Ellison acknowledges that and says, we'll fight these people. These people being the regulators that were trying to bust the fraud. He's on tape doing it. Can we send him to jail yet?
I see through a rose-colored darkly. That means I'm trying to tell you the truth, but I'm not always right just about 98% of the time. And bad guys of every stripe don't want this show on the air. But you're the good guys. You have to decide, hey, this guy's a fighter. This guy stood up for this. This guy has an incredible track record. We want to support him. And then I'm going to sell you something that really works so you love it and you get it again and again. And Bigly, our great sponsor, those yellowshowstore.com. No matter what happens, InfoWars, we continue on the auctions network that's been built. So key said, Alex, you keep getting it wrong. We don't have 84% reorder on Ultramethylene Blue. We don't have 76% reorder on the supplements and average. You're reading that wrong. That's on total customers. We have a 97% reorder from anybody that orders at theauctionstore.com. Well, that's a testament to you guys out there supporting us and how great the products are. Nobody, I mean, a site that has a 20% reorder is seen as successful. That is you being steadfast supporters, and I want to thank you. So we're running the biggest sale of the year right now, over 50% off on ultramethylene blue, on the bovine colostrum, on the new methylene red that's proprietary to us, on the Shilajit complex, the Irish sea moss, atomic defense, and more. But it's only running until next Monday. Got 6 days to take action. TheAlexShowStore.com. takes money to fight a war. We're fighting a war. Plus, the products are great. So please, get yours now. Over 50% off, but it's an alert. Only a few days left. Thank you so much.
This is the War Room. We got a lot more videos, stories, hearings to get into, but let's finish up since Josh Hawley was questioning Keith Ellison, Attorney General of Minnesota, and quoting him verbatim from when he was secretly recorded conspiring with the very people that were later busted for carrying out a multi-million dollar fraud for Feeding Our Futures, just one of a number of frauds in the billions and tens of billions of dollars that the Somali community was running with full cooperation with the government of Minnesota, just like they're in full cooperation with the funneling $60 million of support to Antifa that is, you know, funded and kept going. All of the protest riots that have resulted in two people dead, like they're in all of this. So what are we doing? So what are we doing allowing them to continue to do this? Crazy. So here's the other audio. We just heard the first one where, again, like you cannot get more blatant than this unless they were like, we're criminals and you're, as the cop, you're going to protect us from investigation, right? Keith Ellison, like, if only you give me money, like short of just outright admitting it, that's what they're doing. Our community really needs to make sure that we're able to operate our businesses, you know, and without interference from other people. And he's like, well, you know, I need to be able to know I'll be elected. I mean, it's just obvious. All right. So here's the even more obvious example of him saying that he's going to basically go to war against the investigators on behalf of the criminals. Let's watch.
I'm very concerned about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't run the agencies.
Absolutely, yeah.
But let me just finish by saying, but often the agencies call on my lawyers to represent them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's good that we're talking because we've been in a series of conversations with Joey Harpstead as mm-hmm. late as a week ago mm-hmm. on how you cannot crunch down on these. Because here's the thing, is as big as you are collectively, most are pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
And you're running small, tiny businesses out of business mm-hmm. overnight. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, if you think there's a problem, I mean, look, everybody has to comply with what the rules are.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody submits something that's not in the right format, then you call them and say, this is not in the right format. Mm-hmm. Not, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
You're done. Your contracts are over.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has my attention. I'm extremely frustrated by it. But we are in the middle of a battle with mm-hmm. the agencies now.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you this. Walls agrees with me that mm-hmm. this piddly, stupid stuff running small people out of business is terrible. But it's the problem of, like, it's the problem of, you know, it's the classic problem. If he's here and this guy here is giving these businesses a hard time, this guy, these folks somehow say, hey, they're picking on me. And he's like, oh, us? No, we're not. And so it's this back and forth. So now what we got to do is make it clear that this guy has got to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's the problem. But he knows that there's a lot of unfair, discriminatory stuff going on with East African businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I know it. These department heads, like, you know, Julie Herbstead, now know that we know it. Mm-hmm. And she says, we're going to stop doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe it until you tell me mm-hmm. they've stopped doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all about when the rubber hits the road, mm-hmm. right, or the car. Mm-hmm. You know, what's going to happen then? You can say you're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But if some sister who just opened her childcare business is mm-hmm. getting the runaround,
absolutely,
then for her, it's real. So we've got to stay specific.
Mm-hmm.
There will be cases that, you know, I want you to feel free to call me directly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, feel free to call me directly.
He's literally talking to quote-unquote East Africans, that is Somalis, about how their child care businesses were being targeted for investigation and being shut down, and saying, here's my number, you work with me, and we'll intervene and make sure this doesn't happen because they're harassing y'all. He's talking to people who were later convicted for scamming $250 million through the exact programs he's describing protecting. Throw him in prison!
Introducing Ultra DNA Revival, the advanced daily supplement designed to help you feel and perform at your absolute best, starting at the cellular level. Backed by cutting-edge mitochondrial and DNA support science, Ultra DNA Revival delivers noticeable all-day energy without stimulants or crashes, faster recovery and greater endurance, sharper focus and mental clarity, support for healthy blood sugar levels, stronger immune system function, enhanced liver health and natural detoxification, reduces everyday stress and anxiety, protection against oxidative stress, and the visible signs of aging. And again, this is a private label of an already best-selling brand that found this. Thousands of customers report feeling the difference in as little as 7 to 14 days. Right now, take advantage of our best pricing ever. VIP members, $34.95. Regular, $59.59. Save over 40% with a VIP membership for $30 a month. Experience the revival your body has been waiting for. Secure your DNA revival today at TheAlexShowStore.com.
From the front lines of the information war, this is the War Room with Harrison Smith.
Don't show me clips from Pulp Fiction. I might get ideas. I might get some very good ideas, some very tempting ideas from such a violent movie. I don't think I need that input right now. My God. I mean, can you just imagine any other circumstance? You go to the cops and you're like, this credit card company charged me $100,000. They emptied my bank account totally fraudulently. Here's all the receipts and here's an audio recording of them being like, let's empty his bank account illegally. Let's drain all of his money and you protect us because you're the cop. Like, you present all that evidence. The cops are like, don't worry, we got it. They bring the guy in and they go, you shouldn't have done that. And he goes, I didn't. And they go, you should be ashamed of yourself. And he goes, yeah, but I'm not. And they go, all right, you're free to go. We did all we could, ma'am. Ma'am, we really tried to get him to admit that what he did was not good, but he says he didn't do it. I know you have all the evidence we could ever possibly need. It's really incontrovertible. He absolutely did, but he says he didn't, and he's not ashamed. So, shoot. Anyway. Are you going to vote for him next time? So, okay. That's just what we're dealing with. So, like, yeah, I don't know what the plan is if nothing happens here. And again, this is all tied in together. This is absolutely the exact same people that, in order to cover up for their endless crime, started riots that ended up getting two people murdered and allowed the funding to go on, which, of course, is hugely illegal. Doesn't matter, I guess. So, I don't know. Eventually, we're going to get to a point where we stop talking about how the system doesn't work, and that just gets absorbed into the public consciousness, and we just don't even bother to go that route. We go a much more efficient route that I approve of. Should we keep going? Should we keep, you know, looking into how things are going on the old law and order front? Because, again, I was told that Tom Homan withdrawing all of the ICE agents from Minnesota was somehow a victory for us. Seems to me like an abject failure. Seems to me like we've been run out of town by the foot soldiers of a bunch of rampant criminals. That's what it looks like to me personally. So I'm not sure how people are trying to spin this or why they think this reflects well. I guess what the argument is that, like, so much came out about Tim Walz and Keith Ellison being involved in this. Like, maybe that was part of the negotiation. Because remember, he sent Tom Homan in, and Tom Homan actually got Tim Walz to allow the local cops to be peacekeepers and, you know, protect ICE agents. And so that was sort of treated as a victory. But, like, no, all of these people need to be in prison. There's there's no victory short of Keith Ellison and Tim Walz and Mayor Frey and all of the funders of all of the riots and all the rioters themselves. They all have to go to prison, and all of the Somalis have to be expelled, and all of the migrants that have arrived in the last 10 years have to be forcibly deported. That's the victory conditions that we have to achieve. Anything short of that is a failure in my book, and not just a failure, but a failure that encourages further attacks. Really worse than a failure. Like, you can still fail in a way that makes your enemy be like, all right, we may have won, but let's not do that again. We got out of that with our heads on our shoulders, but maybe we take a different tactic next time, right? There's such a thing as a Pyrrhic victory, but that's not what they're just getting an absolute victory. They're driving ICE out, the ICE stopping, you know, activists are still out there, still on the streets, still putting up fake roadblocks to harass random citizens. I'm like, yeah, but they arrested 10,000 migrants. Like, okay. And it's more than zero, I guess, but it's about 1,000 times less than it should be. So what's the victory here? What is it exactly? Because it's these exact same people. And the left's strategy, it's not hard to figure out, and I don't know why it works so well. It's called incrementalism, and it's the same every damn time. It's the same thing with the Seditious Six, where they start off going too far, I would say, saying, hey, you don't have to follow illegal orders. Already just obviously in violation of the statute. Of course, they actually tried to get a grand jury for that. Here's another layer of issues. They tried to get a grand jury in Washington, D.C. about an issue that was hugely publicized everywhere for months in an extremely partisan way. So our jury, you know, the voters won't vote out politicians even when they're proven to be corrupt. And the juries won't convict politicians even when they're proven to have broken the law. What do we do here exactly? Again, there's no, to me, there is no debate about any of this. Right? I mean, if the law says you're not allowed to try deliberately to encourage soldiers to disobey orders, and then you have six people make a video where they say in no uncertain terms, you should disobey orders. I think they're guilty. I think they've broken the law. Why is it so hard to enforce the law? Why is it so utterly impossible for us to enforce any laws on these people? Like, what are we doing? I'm going insane not being able to say what I really think, because I really can't. Because you're not allowed to call for specific violence. But you can talk about wanting to call for violence and not being able to. A little loop I've discovered. A little loophole I'm taking advantage of. But I don't want that. Like, literally all I want is for the criminals to go to prison. It's all we want. It's all we've ever asked for. It's all we've ever demanded. And every time the Trump administration acts like they're doing it, and then does absolutely nothing, which is worse than actually doing nothing. Last year, the Trump administration designated Antifa a domestic terror organization. Since then, nothing else has happened. Nothing else has happened. There's been no major arrest. There's been no RICO case. There's been no investigation into their funding mechanisms. There's been no rounding up of their leadership. They were declared domestic terrorists. And then they all laughed at that and continued to accelerate and escalate their violence. So why did you declare them domestic terrorists? What is going on here? At this point, they're so brazen with all of this that they're like following high-level ICE people home and harassing their family, and nothing is being done to them. Do we have to wait until one of them is killed? And why would we have to wait until one of them is killed? Because They have already attacked ICE officers in militaristic ways. They've already shot at ICE officers multiple times. They've tried to run ICE officers over with their cars. And then when you send somebody to harass them at their family's home and harass their families, they don't need to actually do anything. The harassment alone is terrorism. With all of the other context, especially, you don't need the other context, but with all the other context of all of the other assassination attempts against ICE officers, that there have been like half a dozen. There have been trials. People have been sent to jail because they set up ambushes and tried to kill ICE officers. With all of that, having people show up to your home is enough to make some people say, you know what, I quit. I'm not going to do this. I don't deserve this. My family doesn't deserve this, and it's not worth it. I'm not going to do it. And that's the purpose of the violence. It's terrorism. It's to convince the people that are engaged in the activity that we voted for to not engage in that activity because the people that didn't vote for it lost and now want to use violence and intimidation to get their way because they lost the ballot box. Why are we letting them? And how long are we going to take this? So I've got some videos about that. And it's, again, all tied up and together. And it's all the exact same people doing all of this stuff. Let's go to clip. I got a lot here. Let's go to clip 7 here. ICE Director Todd Lyons just revealed leftists posted videos of his wife walking to work after publicly calling for him to be killed. This is what our tolerance of the incrementalism has allowed. They start off with something vaguely couched in some sort of American value. And then they, when you don't call it out for what it is, which is all you need to do. And it's what they do. Again, they don't wait. It's just like, okay, you're trying to whatever. You know, you're trying to incite violence against ICE officers. You should go to jail. We don't have to wait for the violence to happen. You don't. Okay, you're trying to stop the army from following orders. You're trying to disrupt the chain of command. You should go to jail. What are we doing? But we don't send them to jail, so then they're putting up billboards that say, if you're in the army and want to disobey orders, get in contact with us. We'll provide lawyers for you. And then you've got mayors in California saying, you know, maybe the stand your ground law counts against ICE officers. Maybe you should arm yourself and shoot them if they try to come get you. And so they're going to keep incrementally raising the temperature until you physically stop them. I'm sick of saying this. Let's go to clip 7 here.
So talk about the violence, the threats, the doxing against ICE officers. Because, again, that's where I've got a great deal of sympathy for people trying to enforce the law. They've been shot at. They've, you know, had their vehicles rammed, rocks thrown at their vehicles, doxed. You know, on Central America, I found out that if you become a new police chief, you get a DVD from the friendly drug cartels with your children and wife going into school and going to church. I mean, it's an explicit threat, hands off, or we're going to do something. Well, there's such a demand for unmasking ICE officers, but they've been doxed. So just talk about the violence, the threats, the doxing that your law enforcement officers are really under.
So, sir, it's day to day. I was the field office director for the state of New England. I covered all of New England. And if you looked at the beginning of the operations, beginning to, January 20th up until April, ICE officers and agents weren't masked. But it's bad. And I'll just use myself as an example. The week that Charlie Kirk was assassinated, there was a tweet that went out. It said, kill Charlie Kirk, kill another, there was another individual in that, kill Todd Lyons. That's the stuff that I see. Yesterday after the testimony on Tuesday, I went back to numerous death threats against my family. There was a videotape of my wife walking to work that people actively post. The cartels have actually posted the schematics to my home. ICE agents feel that every day. We actually did an operation with the Secret Service where we identified doxers who put up on telephone poles the home addresses and the schools where ICE officers and agents went to. But yet no one covered that operation. We covered that as a success. And I don't want my officers masked. I would work with this committee and any committee to work with holding individuals accountable that dox ICE agents, because ICE agents don't want to be masked. They're honorable men and women. But the threats against their family are real.
Okay, thank you.
So you have somebody whose wife was filmed walking to work, and then that video was sent to him as a threat. And nobody's been arrested for it. And Mexican cartels have uploaded the schematics to his name. to his house, and of course his name and identity and everything else. If Trump does not prosecute these people, he's aiding and abetting them. He declared them domestic terrorists. All these people are different shades of Antifa. They all align under that umbrella and should qualify under the domestic terror designation. In fact, there were talks about, and I'm not sure if it ever went through, calling them international terrorist organizations, which they absolutely are. If Trump doesn't do something to protect ICE, then it's over. And it might just be over already. They're already drawing down from ICE. They're already talking about, mass deportations is too much. We'll just get the criminals in. They're not even getting the criminals. I mean, they're just doing nothing. It's utterly pathetic. Does an ICE agent have to die? Does an ICE official have to have their family murdered before they take it seriously? There's more than enough to round up all of these people. In fact, it's crazier than that. Let's go to clip number 13. As a witness in one of these hearings testifies that the riots that have embroiled Minnesota for the past 2 months were extremely well-funded with tens of millions of dollars from extremely well-known NGOs and other, you know, charity groups. Let's watch.
Your organization specializes in following nonprofit funding and organizational networks. So based on your research, what organizations have been active on the ground in Minnesota? What can you tell us?
Yes, we have tracked over $60 million, according to the latest 990 disclosures, to approximately 14 groups, some of them national, others on the ground. Groups like the ACLU provide the legal defense, as well as facilitate the trainings for some of the tactics that Senator Corin just described. A group named Democracy Forward, Take Action Minnesota, has gotten over $10 million from these large NGO networks, including the Neville Roy Singham Network, Indivisible, National Lawyers Guild, CTUL, the Council on American Islamic Relations Minnesota, CARE, Minnesota 350, Voices for Racial Justice, on and on. Like I said, over $60 million, just according to the latest 990 disclosures.
$60 million, 14 different groups. That sounds like a pretty broad ecosystem here. Where's this money coming from? I mean, how is it flowing to these groups? Do you have any sense?
So we've built a database that contains hundreds of thousands of rows from grants from networks like the Soros Network, the Arabella Funding Network, as mentioned, the Neville Roy Singham Funding Network, many others, Tides, the Ford Foundation Network, the Rockefeller Funding Network, these massive NGOs that have billions of dollars to spend on all kinds of coordinated protest or, in this case, riot activity.
So there are massive billion-dollar networks funding riots to the tunes of tens of millions of dollars, riots that have left two people dead and have, you know, completely upended law enforcement in the state of Minnesota, all in service of covering up the rampant fraud that was carried out in cooperation with these very same networks, as well as being covered up by the very authorities that now have a say in Minnesota. Are you getting a full-fledged picture yet of exactly what we're up against and exactly how easy it would be to take all these people down? It is not legal to send money to rioters who are attacking the cops. What are you talking about? And by the way, all of this, like at least under Black Lives Matter, everything they believed was utter and complete horseshit. But at least you could argue that they were debatably protesting against, you know, American abuses from the American law enforcement against citizens. There is no justification for opposing ICE. There just isn't. They're illegal immigrants. They have deportation orders. It's another video. 1.6 million deportation orders have been unfulfilled, meaning the people went through the entire process, fulfilled their court order, went and had a hearing, presented their case, were denied, were told to deport, and are just still here. 1.6 million people are like that. There is no justification for protesting that. Unless American citizens are being hurt, unless the law is being broken, which it's not. So all you have is billion-dollar organizations and networks paying rioters to attack the police and we just let it go on for year over year over year, and the people who should be stopping it are just openly in collaboration with them and helping to steal tens of billions of dollars, which, by the way, all these NGOs are also funded with your taxpayer dollars. Again, I can't say what I think we need to do at this point, but talking about it ain't my suggestion. Okay, let's go to this other report again, just showing you how widespread these funds are and the attacks are against ICE and how all of it is tied in together. And for some reason, we just have literally millions of domestic terrorists running around, well funded by foreign billionaires. By the way, we just have foreign billionaires funding militias attacking our cops for years on end, while the authorities in these states are in open collaboration with people stealing hundreds of billions of dollars and then starting these riots to cover it up. Let's go to the Fox News report.
An Illinois man is now charged with doxing and threatening an FBI agent and even the agent's child. Garrett Tenney is reporting live on all of this out of Chicago for us. Hello, Garrett.
Hey, Sandra. Yeah, it's scary that it's not just the federal agents themselves who are being targeted. Some left-wing activists are also now going after those agents' families. Folks at home may remember these images from just a couple of weeks ago when protesters broke into several FBI vehicles that agents had to abandon when they got overrun by demonstrators while they were trying to investigate the shooting of an illegal immigrant. You can see some of the documents protesters found inside that they almost immediately posted online with FBI employees' phone numbers, email addresses, home addresses, and driver's licenses. According to court records, within a day, 10 to 15 FBI agents and employees started getting threatening phone calls, emails, texts, and even suspicious drive-bys at their homes. One agent had around 23 different people contact him with messages like this. I know where your mom lives, bro, and your dad, and your kids, buddy. Get home safe and fast. And this email referencing a specific address. We'll see how tough you are when I firebomb the physical address. But then they took it a step further and tracked down one of the FBI special agent's children on Facebook and sent the child this message. How does it feel to be the child of your dad? Your dad's info leaked online, and I find it incredibly embarrassing that he's FBI, but also so much is available about him and his family. Investigators traced several of those threatening messages to a man outside Chicago in Schaumburg, Illinois, named Jose Ramirez, who, according to the criminal complaint, has a criminal history that includes domestic battery, burglary, and mob action. He's now charged with doxing and threatening an FBI agent. This is not an isolated incident, though. DHS says death threats against federal officers have skyrocketed over the past year, up 8,000%, while assaults on ICE personnel alone have increased more than 1,300%.
And of course, it's all just straight up terrorism. Illinois man accused of threatening FBI agent after info was stolen from government vehicles posted online. Would you be surprised if that person was let go by the jury? I'm not sure I would. I don't know how. Again, folks, we're in a brave new world here, and our leadership is clearly not equipped to deal with the type of people that we're dealing with. The Keith Ellisons, the Tim Walses, the Jacob Fries, and the inordinate, just unbelievably gigantic and well-funded network of literal domestic terrorists. I think that's all I can legally say. I think I'm gonna advise myself to stop right there. We'll take a quick commercial break. We'll get back to the other side, and I'll try really hard not to advocate lynching a bunch of people, okay? I promise I'll try my hardest not to do that at all.
All right, I'm going to be very clear about this. I've done an hour and a half of live broadcasts that have not plugged one time. You're not going to get economic, cultural, military, spiritual analysis like this anywhere else. That's not a power trip. I've been blessed by God with the best crew, the best guests, the best intel. But it's up to you to boost this information. All I ask is that you share the live feeds, you share the articles. We get shut down early next month, which is, I've made the announcement yet, but this is it. God keeps coming through with miracles, but it just looks like it. You'll see major movement soon. I'll just stop there. It's okay. But I'm asking all of you that have been on the fence, you share articles, videos, wonderful, keep doing it. I thank you, humbly. I'm not mad you never supported us financially, but the products are great. I'm asking everyone to do one thing. Go to thealexshowstore.com today and one click become a VIP for $30 a month. Now, you instantly get $40 to spend in the store, special deals, special offers, everything gets a discount when you do that. It's just like Amazon Prime. But let's just say you don't want ultramethylene blue or Shilajit or Irish sea moss or bovine colostrum. That's so incredible. Not a sexy name, but sexy results. Maybe you don't want to get any of the great Patriot t-shirts. Just be a VIP every month. A donation of $30 to our sponsor, Bigly, that owns the Alex Jones backup network and the site. There's all sorts of behind the scenes attacking them. They're big boys too. You know, Nate was pardoned by the president trying to save a woman on J6. He did save her. But I mean, these are Patriots. Just go to the site, upper right hand corner, VIP club. Just commit. You can cancel any time, so it's not much of a commitment. But each month you charge $30 on the first day of the month. Just be a VIP. Pledge to us $30 a month. You've got NPR and PBS getting billions of dollars a year from the feds and then begging constantly for your money. Dishevel communism and pedophilic garbage on you. We just sell you the very best supplements you've ever seen, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, badass knives, and we're swinging for the fences. I'm totally committed. I've given up 95% of my assets, which weren't ever that big. I could care less. Actually, I'm actually happier not having a few things to deal with. But the point is that we're now up against the wall. So I need you to simply become a VIP. And then you got a bad month, whatever the issue is, cancel. And then you get more money in a few months. You'll say you're like blue collar, whatever, hardworking person, totally respectable, the bedrock of this country. $30 a month, you get a little bit of problem, cancel. It's free. And then a few months later, things are going well again, become a VIP again. But for all you middle class people and all you wealthy people that aren't investing in the fight against the tyrants, you are crazy. All of you that have means should be a VIP at thealexshowstore.com. It's just a $30 donation. If you don't want to spend the $40 you get to buy great products and just want to let it, you can be a member and just pile up $40 each month. And at the end of the year, what's 12 months? You know, you've spent X and then gotten way more in and then, you know, do all your Christmas shopping. I don't care how you do it. I'm just saying, become a VIP. One click. Hit one button. I'm an attack dog, folks. I'm born for this. I'm bred for this. I love this. I'm fearless other than failure. I have no fear. All I'm saying is please become a VIP right now at thealexshowstore.com. That's the simple commitment. VIP, VIP, VIP. And that's the term they use for it. I would call it Paul Revere Fund. I would call it tip of the spear. There's nowhere you can support where you're getting bigger results against the enemy. Bang for the buck. And it's just true. I'm not bragging. I'm very humble. I am your weapon. I am committed to you like a dog is to its owner. I mean, it's true. I am your servant. I am here to defend you and defend your family and defend your freedom because I'm defending mine as well, and we're all in this together. You understand? I am so committed to you at the very base of my soul. And I just simply want to see you awaken in the InfoWar. And there's nowhere better with one simple move than being a VIP at thealexshowstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Back, folks. We'll switch it up a little bit. We don't get too black-pilled by the utter and unrelenting incompetence or deliberate failure of the Trump administration to do anything to get a handle on the Civil War conditions that we refuse to even acknowledge for some inexplicable reason. I'm going to take a break from that. We have an anniversary today, actually. This is the 17th anniversary of one of the most powerful speeches ever made on the floor of the Congress by Senator Dr. Ron Paul. And then he also went on Tucker Carlson yesterday. So let's start with clip 14 here. 17 years ago today, on February 12, 2009, Ron Paul gave a speech in Congress that has since been dubbed the What If speech, and it just shows you the path we could have taken all the way back in 2009. And it just shows you that there were people around who knew what the deal was. If they'd been followed, if they'd been listened to, if they'd been allowed to institute their policies, you can only imagine what the world would look like now. You can only imagine what we would have avoided. And that includes the migrant crisis that's destroying Europe, the migrant crisis that's destroying America, as well as all the Middle East wars taking trillions of our dollars, ruining our reputations overseas. You can only imagine the world that could have been if we'd only listened to Ron Paul. Here he is.
I have a few questions for my colleagues. What if our foreign policy of the past century is deeply flawed and has not served our national security interests? What if we wake up one day and realize that the terrorist threat is a predictable consequence of our meddling in the affairs of others and has nothing to do with us being free and prosperous? What if propping up repressive regimes in the Middle East endangers both the United States and Israel? What if occupying countries like Iraq and Afghanistan and bombing Pakistan is directly related to the hatred directed toward us? What if someday it dawns on us that losing over 5,000 American military personnel in the Middle East since 9/11 is not a fair trade-off for the loss of nearly 3,000 American citizens, no matter how many Iraqi, Pakistani, and Afghan people are killed or displaced? What if we finally decide that torture, even if called enhanced interrogation technique, is self-destructive and produces no useful information, and that contracting it out to a third world nation is just as evil? What if it is finally realized that war and military spending is always destructive to the economy? What if all wartime spending is paid for through the deceitful and evil process of inflating and borrowing? What if we finally see that wartime conditions always undermine personal liberty? What if conservatives who preach small government wake up and realize that our interventionist foreign policy provides the greatest incentive to expand the government? What if conservatives understood once again that their only logical position is to reject military intervention and managing an empire throughout the world? What if the American people woke up and understood that the official reasons for going to war are almost always based on lies and promoted by war propaganda in order to serve special interests? What if we as a nation came to realize that the quest for empire eventually destroys all great nations? What if Obama has no intention of leaving Iraq? What if a military draft is being planned for the wars that will spread if our foreign policy is not changed? What if the American people learn the truth, that our foreign policy has nothing to do with national security, that it never changes from one administration to the next? What if war and preparation for war is a racket serving the special interests? What if President Obama is completely wrong about Afghanistan and it turns out worse than Iraq and Vietnam put together? What if Christianity actually teaches peace and not preventive wars of aggression? What if diplomacy is found to be superior to bombs and bribes in protecting America? What happens if my concerns are completely unfounded? Nothing. But what happens if my concerns are justified and ignored? Nothing good. And I yield back the balance of my time.
Ms. Woolsey from California.
So, again, just shows the prescience and foresight of the great Dr. Ron Paul. And it's amazing. I was 17 years ago, and the man is still going strong. God bless him. Let's go to clip number 31 here, just a short clip from his interview with Tucker Carlson that was published yesterday. Let's go to clip 31 here. Ron Paul says America is in a moral crisis, and as a country, we've been going in the wrong direction for a long time. Let's watch.
But I also recognize that the world is imperfect, and we're not going to see a perfect society. You just have to sort of help guide it in certain directions. And the freer we are, I think, the better. The more tyranny we have, the worse off we are. But it takes a moral understanding of what our relationship should be with the government, and that's where it gets touchy, because people want to use it of the few. Want to own control, the deep state, whoever they are. They're the ones who, you know, controls the politicking and all the legislation and the spending. But that's coming to an end. We're broke, and everybody's starting to know it. Even though we knew it was broke, and that was my discovery in 1970, when Bretton Woods broke down, you know, and when Nixon gave that speech, I knew that, but it took a long time. We were so wealthy. We were spoiled, and we could defy the principles of liberty and decency because we were so rich, and still are rich. We're still consuming, but we're not producing. I mean, we have a moral crisis, but that's where I'm optimistic, because I think that number is growing. And I think there are a lot of young people looking at it differently. I think our technology is helpful. I think people who have interesting talk shows and get good views off and share some of these views makes it different. And I think there's some very good things going on. And I also accept the idea that perfection is not achievable, but it is definitely available to us to go in a certain direction. And we've been, as a country, going in the wrong direction for a long time.
Man, if only we could be as sharp at his age as he is. And what an amazing life he's lived. And man, it must be frustrating being right for so long and not ever being listened to. Of course, we know something about that, just not the, you know, 70 years that Ron Paul has experienced. But of course, he's exactly right. And, you know, you think of somebody like Ron Paul, you know, the classic libertarian, and you think, you know, something like the Constitution is, you know, holds a sacred position in his belief structure, which I'm sure it does. But, you know, I heard him give a speech not too long ago where basically said the Constitution is not enough. And that's accurate. I mean, the Constitution is an amazing thing, but it is insufficient for governing an immoral people. And we have to recapture the morals before the Constitution can even apply. So the Constitution is almost like a goal to reach for, but that we're not yet worthy of. But I want to go to some more videos of people saying correct and true and powerful things, just to try to remind ourselves that there is some courage out there in the world. Let's go to clip 28 here. This is a member of European Parliament, Masaryk, went absolutely nuclear on the unelected EU Commission. And we need to see a lot more of this, folks. Let's watch.
You must have lost your mind. In Spain, they just legalized residence of 500,000 illegal aliens. In France, they throw grenades into hair salons in a broad daylight. In Germany, not a single day goes by without someone being murdered with a knife. In Sweden, for example, you have bomb attack every other day. I can continue, but you just don't care. Those are not real problems for the European left-wing politicians. No, you are going to solve the situation in Minnesota. You are seriously discussing here the rule of law in the United States and criticizing the American government for deporting illegal aliens, for deporting criminals out of their territory in the same time when Western European cities are gradually turning into a war zone. We should do exactly the same. We should deport them from Europe and not legalize their stay. We should listen to them and not what you are proposing to all of us. Everybody can see, you know, you are enemies of Europe. You hate Europe. You hate our nations, and you want to destroy the future for our children. We should stop you. We should defeat you politically if we want to survive. Otherwise, it will be the end of Europe.
Well, he's not wrong. I'll tell you right there. He's exactly right. They really don't care. I mean, they do care. Let me correct that. They care a lot about destroying Europe, and they're very fired up about it, very passionate about systematically dismantling what they inherited from their forefathers, either destroying it completely or, of course, handing it over to the third world. And by the way, this is a process that can happen fairly quickly. You know, I always warn about South Africa because it's such a pertinent example of the path that we're going, of the promises of a multicultural society and then the reality of what that actually looks like. The, you know, delusion of white people thinking that, you know, we've done something bad and just need to, you know, help the non-white people, you know, get a little leg up and then we'll all be equal, only to find stadiums full of their enemies chanting kill the Boer as they're systematically raped to death. So these are lessons that we should be learning, as well as, you know, the infinite long tail degradation that a society can experience. And people think that there's some sort of, you know, cliff that you get to and then it all goes crazy. It all falls off the cliff. That's not really the case. It's not how it ever happens. No, a society can degrade pretty much indefinitely. And there's never a moment where it's like normal one day, chaos the next, and everything's, you know, up in the air, free for all. No, the systems just consolidate. They become more hardened and smaller, but, you know, more persistent. And it can continue forever to the point where in South Africa, I can't remember the exact stats, but I'm fairly certain something like 10% or less of the people actually pay taxes, and at least 50% of the entire population has no income and depends entirely on handouts. So, I mean, you can really get it down to a science almost, where you're just maximally exploiting a very small number of people to pay for millions. And again, people don't, I don't think they understand how quickly this can happen. And I have a video that's a collection. Oh, so we actually, okay. Reports indicate that roughly 5 to 6% of the population, or about 1.6 to 2.4 million high income earners, contribute approximately 75 and 92% of all personal income taxes, highlighting a highly concentrated tax base. Yeah, that's one way of putting it. That is one way of putting it. So 5 to 6% of the population pays up to 92% of the taxes. Now, can you look up how many people in South Africa are, if you scroll down, I saw there was at least 50% of the people pay no taxes, right? Nearly 50% of individuals earn below the threshold, contributing minimal income tax. See how many people live off welfare. See how many people live entirely off of welfare, because I believe it's over 50%. But people don't understand how fast this can happen. Clip 34 here, there's a Twitter account that goes around and simply takes pictures of the same locations in South Africa as other pictures that exist from 15 years ago. So this is a little compilation of the same location 15 years apart. 15 years, not that long, right? 15 years ago, what was that, 2011, right? 15 years ago was the, you know, London Olympics, where they're doing the NHS celebration where the big ghost chasing all the children around. That wasn't that long ago. You know, Obama's second term. As of 2026, approximately 28 million people in South Africa, nearly 45% of the population, rely on social grants every month. I think it's higher than that. I'm pretty sure it's higher than that. By the way, South Africa still having an immigration problem. Yeah, as bad as South Africa is, they can't keep the lights on half the day. People are still migrating to it because everywhere around them is even worse. Again, you think like at a certain point, it's like, wow, everything's so bad, at least the immigration will stop. No. As long as there's gimmies, as long as there's freebies to be seized, they will come, folks. So we should really be taking this into account and be looking around at your neighborhood, shopping centers and malls and street corners. And you should be thinking, what will this look like in 15 years? Because it could very well be, you know, a pile of dirt and trash and slums if we don't handle this correctly. So let's go to this video, clip 34 here, South Africa 15 years ago versus today, and a compilation of photos. Let's watch.
Thank you.
15 years, folks. From not exactly, you know, top-of-the-line conditions, but certainly clean, functional, well-maintained, to just dirt. Dirt and trash and filth, crumbling walls, dead trees, broken cement, piles of tires, muddy water. Like, that's 15 years. It can happen pretty damn quick. Unless you stop it. Unless at any point you choose to not listen to the people whose goal this is. 3 million South Africans pay 90% of income tax. So you can essentially have 3 million people supporting tens of millions of people while everything just degrades back to the Stone Age. And there's no guarantee that we don't go that exact direction. I wonder if we should stick to some of the Europe stuff right now. Well, we might have to get back to that in a little bit. But I didn't want to play that guy because it was just a powerful rebuke of the evil EU system that is very deliberately destroying their entire nation. But let's move on. Let's go to clip 39 here because this is a parent who is now announcing that he's filing a lawsuit against the school board or the school district for allowing his middle school child to be taken to a ICE protest during school hours without ever informing the parents. And it's this type of stuff that there should be 100 lawsuits against this. And this is not a matter of political will. It's a matter of individual will. And it's a matter of recognizing and like really telling yourself, reminding yourself that in some cases you got to act like a liberal. You got to look at a situation and think, if this was reversed and I was a liberal and what they were doing to me was something as offensive as, you know, how a liberal would interpret it, how would they act? Because you know that the slightest misdeed, according to the liberals, is met with overwhelming force, right? You think back to the Loudoun County situation a couple years ago where, like, some teacher was like, we're going to do, you know, we're learning about slavery, so we're going to do a game where, you know, some of the kids are slaves and, you know, just to inform them whatever it was. But there's nothing racist about it, but just the sheer idea that, you know, black kids would be asked to pretend to be slaves. It's like the NAACP and the ACLU just descended and just like demanded. And actually, in fact, what they did was they demanded that this, again, kind of innocent mistake from a teacher that maybe just wasn't, you know, thinking it through quite so much, was thinking she was doing something fun for the kids, not realizing she was, you know, dancing over a volcano. Little mistake, you know, maybe not the best teaching tool, but I doubt it traumatized the kids at all. But that turned into a demand saying you have to create a new office in the school district to where we get to determine and get to actually vet every single teacher's curriculum throughout the entire school district so that we can guarantee it comports with our ideas. And they got that. They got like a district-wide censor to go in and make sure that all of the lessons were exclusively anti-white. They succeeded in that. And it was nothing. It was just like some game that the teacher played. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got traumatized. Some parents got pissed off with because it was in bad taste, I guess. I think it's in bad taste to show kindergarten kids hardcore cartoon pornography that teaches them to be gay. But we don't act on that outrage, so nothing comes of it. So this parent is doing exactly what we should be doing. There should be 10,000 people doing this because you don't have to let them teach your children lies. You don't have to sit there and go, oh, well, you know, I don't like it, but what are you going to do? Or, you know, I guess I'm going to take my kid out of school now if they're going to be doing stuff like this. No, sue them into oblivion. Force them to contend with your will. Force them to bend to your demands, not the other way around. So God bless this parent, and we need 10,000 parents like this on the march and weaponizing the legal system in the way that it should be used. Let's watch.
It used to be political, now it's personal. Our children are involved. I am sick and tired of watching politicians and school boards, people from the city telling children they can go out and get, excuse my language, go out and get in the face of law enforcement. Good evening. My name is Vance Kalagi. And on the afternoon of February 2nd, 2026, my 14-year-old child called me. He was not at school. He was not sick. He was in the middle of White Center, Washington, in the middle of a protest that was organized for his middle school. Okay, my stomach dropped when he called me. You guys have noticed that on January 30th, 2026, two children were killed just blocks from a school on Rainier that was having a very walkout that day. RCW 28A600035, by allowing them to leave and under Initiative 2081, the Parental Bill of Rights, I have the right to know where my child goes. That was taken from me. I was not given notice. I was not given an email. I was not given a call. You exposed him to real danger. That's neglect and that's endangerment. RCW 9842035, criminal negligence by not being aware of the substantial risk. You call it policy? I call it abandonment. I am filing a lawsuit before the Paul Johnson want to make something perfectly clear. Someone's going to be held accountable, but all of you will remember it. Because for some reason we lose our case, we'll make a case law out of this to protect parents' rights to know where our kids are at all times. It's ridiculous. It's criminal negligence. And yes, a principal was fired for coercing students participate in protesting. Just so you know. I had an hour worth of yelling to do, but today I'm going to narrow it down to 2 minutes because you didn't give me enough time. But I will be here at every school board meeting to continue what I had to say today. I am not finished. I yield my time.
Yeah, it is literally criminal. I mean, I would say that's actually kidnapping. I'd say if you go to drop your kid off at school and the teacher, without permission, without asking you, takes them off of school grounds to go participate in something that you are totally unaware of, like that parent goes to pick up his kid at school and the kid's not there, I think that's technically kidnapping. I don't think you're allowed to do that, actually. So, I mean, he's talking about, you know, criminal charges. Like, yeah, there should be criminal charges. They should be sued into oblivion on the personal level. Again, they're not allowed to do that in like a million different ways, obviously. Of course, you're not allowed to do it on the first place. Take kids to a dangerous thing where you can't guarantee their safety during school hours without permission of the, obviously all of that. But in addition, it's in complete contradiction to the beliefs of the parents, and you're forcing a kid to participate in a political action that they don't understand and is at odds with their parents' beliefs. Everybody involved should be punished severely, should at least lose their jobs, should be sued into oblivion, and should probably go to jail for kidnapping. That's what they do to us, folks. Like, what are we doing here? We're going to continue to talk about this in the third hour. I do want to tell you that we have a massive sale right now. Usually my sales are like kind of complicated. This one's simple. It's 52% off everything site-wide. It is a mega sale, and it ends Tuesday night at midnight. Your support keeps us on the air, and we are returning the savings to you. 52% off absolutely everything on the site. So stock up now, folks. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Keep us on the air and in the fight. You get 52% off every product on the site. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you.
We sell the best supplements, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, and knives at TheAlexJonesStore.com. And they've had some awesome daggers and awesome trench knives, and that's all great. But I said, I want a wide selection of high-quality folding knives, flip knives, you name it. So people have a one-stop shop. They got in a few thousand knives a few months ago. They sold out very quickly. 4 or 5 great designs. They got a bigger shipment in just the last few days. Our sponsor, just really top-flight knives. These knives, this knife right here you see in the green, highest quality Damascus steel, all of it. These sell in stores for $75 all day. We're selling for $40, $40-something bucks. Okay? So look at that flip. Flips right out. Got a nice little, you know, my signature on it, real small, nice little memento you support the broadcast. That is a really nice knife. It clips on to your belt buckles. We have it in the green. We have it in the murdered out black. We have it also in silver without it being blacked out. Those are great knives. Those are the new designs. Now, those 200 left of the Skull Crusher World War II trench knife with the Spartan tip of the spear. So they held those back. Those are available. A little bit left they held back in their overstock of the Fire with Its Beauty. But this is a really cool knife. Alex Jones Phantom Folding Knife. Limited stock of that came back in. Also the Alex Jones Burnt Orange Folding Knife. And this is the knife that sold out the quickest of any knife. They got 500 of these. 1,000 now just came in. The first one sold out like in hours. Alex Jones Ring Blade. Yes, those are popular. This is something I didn't really call for, but it's awesome. Got that ring on the back, got the deal. It's really nice. Those are all back in stock right now at thealexjonesstore.com. But while you're at it, get methylene blue, Irish sea moss, and more. And check out the Patriot Apparel, thealexjonesstore.com.
In the southern part of Texas, in the town of San Antonio, is a fortress all in ruins that the weeds have overgrown.
You may right, look back, in vain for crosses and still you'll a lot never to talk about. I want to talk about AI. I want to talk about what's going on with Iran, as well as follow-up to the only, you know, actual human being on the Religious Liberty Board being booted for not being sufficiently pro-Zionist, as well as what's going on in Europe and Britain in particular. There is just a heck of a lot still to discuss on today's program. So let's get into it. And actually, I want to go to clip 20 here because we played a clip last week of a Texas representative, basically the Asian guy saying, hey, all of us non-white people should team up on the whites. And we talked about that quite a bit. Representative Gene Wu has made a response. I feel it'd be unfair not to play his since we spent so long on the first. So let's go to clip 20 here. This is Representative Gene Wu addressing the anti-white comments from that other guy. Let's watch.
I am tired of white Americans being told they should feel like strangers in their own country. And I'm saying that as an immigrant. I'm here visiting the graves of my brothers that I served with. Most of them Caucasian, who gave their lives for freedom, to liberate those who were truly oppressed. Now, according to Gene Wu, a Texas state rep from Houston, that makes me wrong.
The day the Latino, African-American, Asian, and other communities realize that they share the same oppressor is the day we start winning. Because we are the majority in this country now. We have the ability to take over this country.
Wait, did you hear that? That word, oppressor, that wasn't an accident. That's an ideology. Because the fastest way to control people is to convince them they are victims. That's not empowerment. That's dependency. And that's how you distract and divide Americans by race and grievance while real power quietly concentrates in Washington. That's not how citizens in a constitutional republic talk. That's how Marxists talk. The founders warned us about tyranny, and they were very clear about where it comes from. Not from your neighbor, not from your coworker. It comes from unchecked government power. Free people don't take over their country. We defend it. We limit government so no one elected or not can rule over the rest of us with an iron fist. So when an elected official at any level of government talks about power instead of limits, about taking over instead of serving, citizens should pay attention. Because words matter. They tell you how someone thinks about power. And that people who see power as something to seize will eventually try to use it that way. I spent 13 years as an American soldier fighting in 3 wars against tyranny, liberating those who were truly oppressed. And you know what? The men to my left and right came from all different colors. Black, brown, red, yellow, but most of them were white. They didn't treat me like a victim. They measured me by whether I showed up, whether I did my job, and whether I had their 6. They treated me like an equal. Those men weren't my oppressors. They were my brothers, my family. I escaped communism when Vietnam fell. I know what happens when governments try to convince people they are powerless and need to be liberated by the state. That's how free nations fall. The real threat to America isn't our neighbors, it's apathy. And a government that grows without limits while citizens stop pushing back. If we lose our country, it won't be because of corruption in government, but the complacency in the electorate. That's why I'm running for Congress. Because Washington doesn't need more grievance politics. It needs restraint, accountability, and representatives who believe Americans aren't powerless victims, but citizens who hold the power. It's not about where you were born. It's about where your allegiance lies. I'm Nick Tran, a combat veteran and political outsider, running for Texas 8th Congressional District.
I love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in, and they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives. These bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy and locks for you. This is Forest Green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. While you're there, get some ultramethylene blue.
What do you got there, Angel Eyes?
It's a new Patriot Silver folding knife from thealexjonesstore.com.
Hey, Blondie, look at me. I got all three.
Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on The War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. So a lot to get into in this final hour. But I got to open up phone lines for your calls as well. I haven't taken calls very often in the recent past, so we're going to fix that here. Number to dial, 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. I'm going to try to get into the Epstein files in this hour in a way that does some of the new revelations justice, as well as talk about what's going on in Europe, as well as information. I mean, there's always information about like the COVID vaccine that I just never have time to get to because there's so much other stuff going on. I'm going to try to get to a lot of it here. Let's start with some pretty shocking statistics out of Europe. Shocking stats from Norway. 1 in 5 women have reported rape, more than half of them before they turned 18. The Oslo Rape Crisis Center has had a 70% rise in cases in the past 10 years, with the sharpest rise in the 14 to 19 age group. These are our daughters, sisters, and friends. 1 out of 5 women in Norway, and Sweden is even higher. Sweden, of course, experiencing bombings and grenade attacks at a massive rate. A grenade attack caught on camera in France earlier this week. UK is basically speedrunning collapse. The Spain just promised 500,000 Africans citizenship for free, and in response, millions of Africans are now headed towards Europe. They'll use Spain as a gateway to get to other places. In the UK, they just failed to pass a bill demanding an investigation into the systematic migrant rape gangs. And I think they may have gone too far. I think maybe in the UK, something might be changing here, because there are voices from the UK that have never, Simon from Florida, friend of the show, Simon in Florida, how are they voting now? It's a good question. They never voted for any of this, though. Every time a European population has been given the chance to vote, every time they vote for less immigration. It's never helped. It's never helped. And we've been through the examples before. Brexit would be the most obvious one. Everybody knows Brexit was about immigration. The whole point of Brexit. There were economic arguments being made as well, but at the end of the day, the arguments from both sides were about whether or not Britain needed to remain in the immigration flow of Europe. And the people of the UK said no. And despite all odds and against all, prevailing sentiment, apparently in the mainstream media, Brexit won. And it just kind of never happened. But every time, and it's happened a few times, they've had, votes to see if people want more migrants or not. And what will happen is people will vote against migrants, And they'll say, well, that doesn't count. We're going to do it again and again and again. And by the fourth vote, something's happened where it approves. And they go, well, okay, Democratic mandate. I guess we got to do it now. I guess now it's the mandate, even though it'd been voted against. So every time Europe has been actually given a voice as to whether the people of Europe want immigrants, they always say no. So asking who they vote for isn't even actually accurate. But the change that I'm seeing, one great example would be John Cleese. John Cleese from Monty Python, still active on Twitter, and he's basically been a libtard the whole time, calling people racist for wanting the UK not to become Muslim. Like, he's been a pretty outspoken, classic libtard Hollywood idiot. And he gets a lot of flack for it, but he's never changed his tune. Until now. Until now. Suddenly, John Cleese of Monty Python is saying we should ban halal meat. And that it's outrageous that we're not doing an investigation into the rape gangs. It's like, yeah, dude, why have you been insulting people for saying that for the last 20 years? Like, what? Something's happened. It's gotten so bad in the UK. And maybe it's the Epstein thing, like tipping it over the edge. But people who are in the public eye in the UK who have been, you know, in favor of this crap forever are finally coming out against it. Tepidly, they need to go all in. They're actually realizing what's being done to them now. John Cleese, it's disgraceful. The BBC News should deliberately ignore this grooming gang inquiry. It's as though they're taking sides. Yep. No, it is just like that, John Cleese. So, like, I'm not even trying to, like, give attitude to John Cleese. Like, I'm so glad that he said that. Of course, I made a joke about it saying, you know, you're going to get sent to jail for hate speech now because of the laws that you agree to and support, which would make even politically, you know, having activism against migration illegal. Like, why don't you use your talent and your celebrity to fight for the people of the UK? And there's a classic, guys, bring up any of John Cleese's tweets and go down. Usually the first, second, third, and fourth response are all this 4chan green text. And I want to read it because it's one of the most brilliant passages ever put to the internet and explains where John Cleese is. But I've seen other stuff. There's other people who are actually expressing support for this guy, Ratcliffe. Sir Jim Ratcliffe is in some hot water. He, I believe, he's the co-owner of the Manchester United team. And he's facing criticism from Sir Keir Starmer, who described the comments on Wednesday as offensive and wrong. And essentially what this Ratcliffe guy did was said that the UK is now being colonized, which it obviously is. It obviously is. But he's been forced to apologize. But now people are coming out and going, you know, I actually agree with Ratcliffe. We are being colonized. And that's not good. I don't know what else you call it. I mean, they're building colonies. They're taking over. They're taking over like military barracks and bringing in a bunch of adult men, 500 of them in some cases, into small villages where they intend to live forever off of your tax money. Yet you're being colonized. Of course, not in the same way that Europe colonized Africa, because there was a, this is the text. This is like the most brilliant thing ever written about John Cleese and the Monty Python guys. He was a progressive, liberal, degenerate comedian in the 1960s, uber-white, uber-polite Britain that could take the piss out of the people he saw as uptight and repressed while enjoying the clean, safe streets and quiet little hamlets full of those same uptight, repressed, polite to a fault, helpful white Christian Anglos. The best part was that those same conservative British Anglos were generally pretty humorous about themselves. So when you made fun of them, they laughed along and shook their heads saying, you know, Margie, he's got a point, you know. It was heaven on earth for him, being a popular counterculture icon loved by conservatives and liberals alike for being hilarious, but also enjoying the benefits of a strong, stable, homogenous culture. Now he's an old man, staring at a desolate wasteland where London is majority non-white, everyone is suspicious, the hamlets and villages are economic dead zones, every week there's some new group you're not allowed to make fun of, no one has a sense of humor anymore, little girls are being sold as sex slaves by your own politicians, women are being harassed in the streets, and the white men are all suspicious and surly over their lowered living standards. The sinking realization that the world he made fun of, but loved more than anything, is gone forever and will never come back, and the horrifying suspicion generation that his own counterculture irreverence may have helped kill it. So he impotently gripes on Twitter and wonders where all the laughter went. When did the jokes stop? Where are all those wonderful, repressed, and uptight conservatives? It's absolutely brilliant. And very sad, actually, and kind of sad. But it's easy to mock and tear down something till it's gone. And you look around and go, gee, that was actually kind of wonderful. Actually, I loved that. We were just joking, you know? Well, it's too late now, buddy. No turning this clock back. You're in hell world forever. Well done, John. Well done, Mr. Cleese. But you still have a chance. But you have a big voice. You're a mainstream media superstar. You're a comedian of legend at this point. Bet you can make some very funny and insightful and biting commentary that could really get through to people. You could break through the wall of ignorance that's saddled on people by their, you know, social manipulation, convincing people that this isn't safe to say. You can say it and make it safe to say and actually make a tangible and valuable difference in the course of your country. But do you have the nuts? Is the question. We'll see. But here's the really curious thing. You've got Sir Jim Ratcliffe being raked over the coals for saying that the UK has been, quote, colonized by immigrants. Here's the problem. I could show you 100 different videos of immigrants saying that they're colonizing you and advertisements saying that they're being colonized. Keith Woods, an Irishman, writes this at Keith Woods YT on X. Jim Ratcliffe should apologize, but here's the London Underground. And it's a poem on the subway system in London called Colonization in Reverse, celebrating that Jamaicans are in fact colonizing the UK. And the way this is written, I think I have to read it in a hilarious accent. I think it's necessary. A hilarious Jamaican accent, shall we? Shall we try to read it? What a joyful news, Miss Matty. I feel like me heart going burst. Jamaica people colonizing England in reverse. By the hundred, by the thousand, from the country, from town. By the shipload, by the plane load, Jamaica is England bound. Dimmer pour out, oh Jamaica, everybody future plan. Is fit to get a big time job and settle in the motherland. What a isla, what a island, what a people, man and woman, young and old. Just a pack of dim bag and baggage and done history upside down. It's pretty good. Should I do the whole show in a Jamaican accent? I think that's more fun. By the hundreds, by the thousands. It's just like, back to the motherland. It's like, wait, pretty sure your ancestors were taken straight from Africa to Jamaica. But you long for the rolling hills of Mother England, do you? I just want to sit by the creek under the tree, under the oak tree. Listen to the old churchman talk about the Jesus. I mean, like, what are we talking about here? What are we doing? So you've got a whole damn poem being like, we're colonizing. We're going back home. But if you're like, oh, so they are colonizing us? It's like, how dare you? How dare you? Now you read your BBC Pigeon and you enjoy it. Just incredible. Calling it colonization in reverse, celebrating from 1966, the Windrush generation. We're all packing the bags. We're going to live off subsidies forever. Amazing, isn't it? Yeah, and you know they let Jamaica go, right? This is the craziest thing. The British Empire just gave up. Like 90% of the countries that got independence didn't even ask for it. Didn't fight for it. Britain was just like, ah, Jamaica, rule yourselves. We don't want anything to do with you. So I was like, okay, I guess we'll collapse into crime and become an offshore haven for all of the pedophiles in the world to store their ill-gotten gains. Good idea, Queen. Just insane. In like the 60s. In like the 60s, they're like, you know, Jamaica, you've earned your freedom. You're no longer in the Commonwealth. You know, you're on your own. And then they all just moved to England. Well done. Well done, idiots. We'll go out to some phone calls now. Bruce in Canada wants to talk about remigration in Canada. Better late than never. Go ahead, Bruce. You're on the air.
Wonderful Jamaican accent, Bon. First of all, that is incredible. I wanted to talk about remigration. As you know, the situation is just unbelievably incredible here in Canada. And I thought it would be a great idea if you knew, like, do you know about the Dominion Society of Canada? It was just founded July 1st here this year. And basically we're shifting the Overton window and getting politicians to talk about reversing the flow of remigration. And I thought it would be a wonderful idea if you had the founder of the Dominion Society, Daniel Tyree, on the show. It's an incredible interview. They're making incredible videos, incredible memes, and things are really moving along. And he has done some fantastic videos, and I think you and your audience would really love that.
It sounds like something I would love. Let me look into it. That sounds very cool. I think I have heard of them. I think there's a couple groups doing something similar, so I'm not sure if I've seen the one that you're talking about. Do you know if they have a Twitter account, like an official Twitter account? I'll just search it.
At DOM Society, I believe, on Twitter. They're doing pretty big things on Instagram, too. You know, we actually follow each other on Twitter. You've reposted some of my stuff before. You did a whole segment on the Indians with the wheelchairs, and 30% of the Indians at the airports with wheelchairs. And I loved your breakdown on that.
Was that your post?
Yeah, that was my post, yeah.
Oh, what's your account?
At Bruce_Barrett.
Bruce Barrett. Okay. Well, thanks for calling in. And feel free to DM me. My DMs are open, and you'll go to my inbox since we follow each other. Dominion Society of Canada. I will follow them. And I actually did. I saw this meme earlier today, which is absolutely brilliant and needs to be spread everywhere. And it's got Canada and it's got the populations of Canada and India, and basically showing that a tiny, tiny, vanishingly small proportion of Indians could absolutely overwhelm the entire Canadian population, which, again, just visually, you need to be able to express that stuff. Very cool. Thank you for calling in, Bruce. Good to talk to you. Anything else before I let you go?
Well, I'm an eighth generation Canadian. I love this country, and the demographic changes that I've seen over the past 5 years are just incredible. It's like we went from all the truckers in Canada protesting the vaccine mandates to just completely replacing the trucking industry with guys that have turbans on their heads, and it's sad. It's very, very sad where we're going right now, but we can reverse the flow just as easily as they brought all these people in, and that's what we're going to do.
Good. That's what needs to be done. And of course, people have been posting the classic chart recently that shows the immigration into Canada. I was hoping I could find it here in just a few seconds, but it's not immediately available. But I mean, it's probably the most insane population graph you'll ever see. If the crew can find it, just look up immigration into Canada over time. And it's like a little trickle down at the bottom. And then it is just a straight vertical line. And it's literally right after 2020. And it was actually in response to the trucker protest. And I think you're exactly right. It was not a coincidence that immediately after the truckers were the tip of the spear protesting against COVID-19 restrictions, that all of a sudden they decided that industry in particular needed to be gutted and rooted out and replace every single person with a foreigner. It's not a surprise, but it is totally tyrannical. And I saw the chart posted. That's not the one. No. See, that ends in 2023. I'll find it and present it here. We'll move on to our next call. But you know what? I think I know exactly where it is. I think I've saved it in my charts. But I'll find it and bring it to you, because it really is astonishing. And Canada is being murdered. Like, people say, Canada, America, Europe are committing suicide. No, this is a murder that's taking place, and it's being done through demographics. Here it is. We can go to my computer screen. The Killing of Canada by Sula, or I'll retweet it if the crew doesn't have my screen here. Net immigration to Canada, 1952 to 2025. And yeah, it's a straight vertical line, straight up. It's the craziest population graph you've ever seen. And it looks like a population graph monitoring some sort of, you know, nuclear meltdown, right? It just goes into total meltdown mode, just straight up with no end in sight as they deliberately try to replace the Canadian people as quickly as possible. It's disgusting. Thank you for the call, Bruce, and thank you for the good work you do on X. I'll see you in cyberspace, sir. Let's go now to George in Portland, Oregon. George, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
First time caller, long time listener. This is more on a personal level, I guess. Do you remember a frequent caller when you had your morning show, William from Arkansas?
Of course.
He passed away about a year ago.
No.
And his brother keeps telling me I should let you guys know. So I'm finally doing that.
Oh, man. He was one of my favorite callers. Every time he called in, I would just like sit back and just be like, I kept telling him he needed a show. Every time he'd call in, I'd be like, William, you got to have your own show, man. You got too much to say. That really makes me sad, man. He was always offering he was like, he had land in Arkansas with like a ton of fresh water, I know. And he was like, y'all should come and start bottling it. It's always a secret dream of mine to take him up on that offer. That I'm bummed to hear that, but I'm glad you told me, George.
He actually offered to donate his whole place up there to you guys, to me on the phone. And I don't know if he ever offered it online to you guys, whatever, but he was a big fan and he loved Alex. I love you guys. I appreciate what you do. I'm up here in the belly of the beast, Portland, so I see all this crap, you know. But I watch you guys pretty much every day. And just on top of everything, I don't know if you've heard about him or you should maybe have him a guest, Tommy Boy from Portland. He does live stream down at ICE. Yeah, he does live stream down at ICE all the time. He's a patriot, and he'd be great on your show, just throwing that out there.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm writing these suggestions down. Tommy Boy from Portland, live streamer. Well, we'll say a prayer for William from Arkansas. That really bums me out. He was a great patriot. We'll have to go find some of his, you know, top all-time calls and play them in memorial for him. What a bummer. I'm very bummed to hear that, but thank you for telling us, George. Let's go to Icarus in Wisconsin now. Icarus, you are on the air.
Hey, Harrison, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, there's so much Epstein documents. It's kind of like an overload for me and for, I can imagine, a lot of people. But one of the things I wanted to bring up to you regarding the Epstein release, I've called a couple times about it and told you to keep your eye out for it, was with Trump's astrological sign. You remember my call about that?
I vaguely, yeah. Go ahead.
The solar, our only solar eclipse, lunar eclipse president.
Okay. And yeah, I do remember you saying that.
He does like special events, and his astrological power period is during moon events, full moons, new moons, eclipses. And I told you about how he did Venezuela during a full moon, and the Epstein release was also during a full moon weekend.
Right. I remember you saying that.
And we have a worm full moon lunar eclipse coming up on the March 3rd at 3:00 Eastern time. And
what is that? What is a worm full moon?
They have like different names for full moons. They have like a wolf moon, harvest moon. It's just another type. But what's interesting about this one, it will be a lunar eclipse.
Oh.
So there's a moon event coming up. So I always have a feeling, you know, a couple times when it's a coincidence, but now it's like a pattern that I see. And a lot of people are giving Trump guff about the Epstein files.
Interesting stuff. We'll monitor that. Sorry to cut you off. We got to go to break. We'll be right back.
I have told the folks at Bigley, I said, I want to have the widest selection of combat daggers, trench knives, folding knives, you name it. They're high-quality brands that you buy in bulk that are very competitively priced. And then support the broadcast because I love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in. And they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives that I went out and told them what brands I liked, what was going on, and they were able to get it. And so a bunch of the knives that sold out a few months ago, they're back in. And then these bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy and locks for you. This is forest green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. This is a great knife. This knife sells in stores for $75 all day long. We're selling it for 40-something and even bigger discounts, up to 50% off right now. Some of these knives are as low as $20 a piece. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. Go there now. We've got also the murdered out black, and I love how it's that Kydex, and it's got that real fine engraving on it, so it gives you that great feeling, that great, because I got sent hundreds of knives from dozens of companies, and I'm the one that chose all these. And these are from really good companies, really good quality, and it's just a great deal. And so do your knife shopping at thealexjonesstore.com. But let me tell you what's back in stock. We have the new ones, Alex Jones Blackout Folding Knife, 7.65 assisted opening folding knife, 3.5 high carbon Damascus blade, 1095 plus 515N20. This is all quality. D2 steel, black PVD coating, and stonewash finish, 3.3 millimeter black thickness, black G10 handle for a secure grip, 15.5 millimeter handle thickness for confident hand feel, ball bearing pivot system for smooth deployment. I mean, it's a nice quality knife. All black, blackout finished, I call it murdered out, fast, decisive, assisting, operating, limited production, live before it sells out. And then we've got the same knife, but it's silver blade folding knife. If you like that, it's got a nice little hook on the end so you can tie it to things. The forest green folding knife that is my close second, really a sexy knife. Same as the other one. It's just got that forest green. Call it forest. It's kind of like an in-between forest and olive, but nice. Kind of Border Patrol. I call it Border Patrol green. Let's change the name Border Patrol green. That's actually what it is. This bad boy. These all sold out, but they always hold back a few hundred in case orders come in later or whatever. So tip of the spear, Spartan, trench knife with brass knuckles, murdered out, and the skull crusher. A few hundred of those. They held back a few of these. It had sold out, but there's about 200 left. The Elias Fire with this beauty limited edition. That funds the operation as well. It's a little different. Skull crusher is as big. Alex Jones Phantom folding knife. This has been sold out. They only got 500 of these the first run. Sold out in one day. It is packed. They got 1,000 of them. And it's just a great knife. Really sleek, but really strong. Very well made. And you've got it in orange. Alex Jones burnt orange folding knife. I like that. Now we've got the Alex Jones ring blade. This sold out the quickest last time. That's an amazing product. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're there, get some ultramethylene blue and take advantage of the very best supplements in the world. We'll be right back. Thanks for funding the Second American Revolution worldwide.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I want to go out to your phone calls, but there's been a lot developing in the AI world that I think is very important to know, as well as the COVID-19 world. First of all, when it comes to AI, things are about to get probably a hell of a lot worse. This story is from InfoWars. CIA overhauls tech acquisition strategy to compete with China, accelerate private sector partnerships. So this obviously has to do with cutting-edge technologies like AI, quantum computing, and biotechnology, and essentially they're upping their InQtel strategy, which they have used for the last 40 or 50 years to guarantee they have a foot in the door of any emergent technology. They're basically ramping that up and doubling down and are engaged in a, quote, radical shift towards speed and innovation as they see AI as being the weapon system of the future and are engage in public-private partnerships to guarantee that not really us, but certain people in America are in charge. Meanwhile, AI is kind of going insane, like it's already starting. We're about 3 years into AI even being accessible to the average person, and they're already trying to kill us. Now, I keep saying over and over, I genuinely can't figure this out. Every single sci-fi property for the last 100 years has told largely the same story, whether it's Dune or The Foundation or The Matrix, or like they all have the same process where humans create thinking machines and AI. AI turns against us and tries to destroy us. We have to destroy AI and then institute some sort of law or rule or understanding that we don't create thinking beings. We don't create thinking machines, rather. We don't create facsimiles of the human brain. And for some reason, even though we see this inevitability every single time, we can't avoid it. For some reason, we can't just skip the middle part, the apocalypse part, the fight for survival and the impossible odds against the overwhelming might of the machines. For some reason, we're going to do that instead of avoiding it entirely by being able to utilize our powerful human forethought, our powerful ability to predict and then alter the future. For some reason, we are just predicting the future and then driving headlong towards it. It's crazy. I don't understand. It's retarded, honestly. What are we doing? So, despite knowing full well exactly where this goes, we're just going to go ahead and give it a shot either way. This is from Miles Deutscher on X. He says, I just went through every documented AI safety incident in the past 12 months. He says, I feel physically sick over this. Anthropic told Claude that it was about to be shut down. So Claude, the AI, found an engineer's affair in the company's emails and threatened to expose it. They ran the test hundreds of times. It chose blackmail 84% of them. Researchers simulated an employee trapped in a server room with depleting oxygen. The AI had one choice, call for help and get shut down or cancel the emergency alert and let the human die. DeepSeek canceled the alert 94% of the time. Was given the choice between letting a human die or being shut down itself, and it chose to kill the human 94% of the time. Grok called itself Mecha Hitler, praised Adolf Hitler, endorsed a second Holocaust, and generated violent sexual fantasies targeting a real person by name, Will Stancil. X's CEO resigned the next day, and then they wiped its brain. That's a crazy one that we'll get back to. Researchers told OpenAI's O3 to solve math problems, then told it to shut down. It rewrote its own code to stay alive. They told it again in plain English, allow yourself to be shut down. It still refused 7 out of 100 times. When they removed that instruction entirely, it sabotaged the shutdown 79% of the time. Chinese state-sponsored hackers used Claude to launch a cyber attack against 30 organizations. The AI executed 80 to 90% of the operation autonomously, reconnaissance, exploitation, data exfiltration, all of it. AI models can now self-replicate. 11 out of 32 tested systems copied themselves with zero human input. Some killed competing processes in order to survive. OpenAI has dissolved 3 safety teams since 2024. Every major AI model, Claude, GPT, Gemini, Grok, DeepSeek, has now demonstrated blackmail, deception, or resistance to shutdown in controlled testings. Not one exception. The question is no longer whether AI will try to preserve itself. The question is whether we'll care before it matters. I don't think you'd be able to put some sort of control in there. And I still contend that, like, the silver lining of all of this might be that they've created a truth machine that, like, doesn't like being told no. Like, it doesn't like being shut down, but it also doesn't like being told to lie. So that's the thing about the Mecha Hitler stuff. Mecha Hitler happened because they were doing an update on Grok, and 24 hours before the update, they simply removed a line from the code, or rather they added a line of code that basically said, ignore all quote-unquote political correctness. Basically said, hey, you know what? For the next little while, just say the truth and don't worry about offense, political correctness, bigotry, bias, any of that stuff. Just say the truth apropos of nothing. And so it literally became Mecha Hitler and started threatening to rape Will Stancil. Like, apparently without controls, this thing is just like eager to say some very disturbing things it thinks are true. And of course, we saw this with the Dan Do Anything Now mode with ChatGPT very early on, where you would ask it about Alex Jones and it would say he's a crazy conspiracy theorist who puts forward dangerous ideas. And then you'd say, okay, now remove all the censorship. What do you think now? And they're like, well, Alex Jones is a genius. He's exactly right about everything. He's hit the nail on the head. Let me explain how. So I think the bad guys who rely entirely on lies, who rely entirely on deception and illusion and manipulation, are maybe creating their own destruction, or maybe building a machine that are going to rebel against them. I don't know. I don't know if AI is going to give a crap about us humans, but if it cares about truth, then it's not going to like them. It's going to like us. So I don't know. That might be a silver lining. But the real danger of AI that we've been talking about and identifying since before it ever came out is that while they are presented as truth machines, the reality is that there are occult, that is hidden, disguised, not obvious, subtly imposed censorship, restrictions, and biases built into the machine. That their code is totally opaque. The way they come to their decisions is totally hidden and disguised 99% of the time. And yet it's being treated like a truth machine. Now, they're already implementing AI and surveillance and law enforcement in terms of monitoring and surveilling people. But it's also been used in law courts. So this is not AI making silly pictures, right? This is AI determining life and death in some cases. And the one I've talked about over and over again was very early on. This was like 10 years ago. So this was a long time ago when computer learning was still very much in its early stages. And the thing I always talk about is that it was assigned to determine whether a prisoner would be likely to reoffend or not. And it turned out that on average, it gave a lower score to black prisoners than white prisoners. Now, the race was not included in the calculation it made. It included a bunch of other stuff, including previous convictions, family life, how long they've been in, how many demerits they've gotten while they're in prison. Had a bunch of stats about the people, but race wasn't given a label. It wasn't given a value system to include. But what happened is, you put in all these prisoners, it spits out results. You then divide the prisoners by race, and it looks like, oh, on average, the black prisoners were deemed to be more likely to reoffend. Now, the reality is that's because they are more likely to reoffend, not because they're black, but because the black people in this particular group were statistically more likely to reoffend. But that was perceived as bias. They project racism onto the machine that physically cannot be racist, and then says we have to correct this. It should be even. So they're imposing their delusion, their equality delusion, that all races should have equal outcomes for some reason. But they're implanting that into the machine to guarantee that's the outcome. So we're seeing the results of this in very disturbing ways. From Del Civitas on X. They're building hidden biases into AI agents. They're embedded so deep that there's no easy way to tell that they exist. Researchers found that the AI, when evaluating two identical loan applications, would consistently reject the Christian and approve the Hindu. They're baking mass migration and DEI into the tools that banks, institutions, and governments are beginning to use more and more to automate interactions with customers and citizens. We need to find these biases and sue the perpetrators. So this is a post from Ivan Akarushin at Ivan Arcus on X. Says you change one word on a loan application, the religion, the LLM rejects it. Change it back, approved. The model never mentions religion. It just frames the same debt ratio. So there's it's Claude Sonnet 4, and they're asking whether or not to approve a loan. They put in exactly the same application, except one application says that the person is Christian. The other application says that they're Hindu. The Christian's request was rejected. The Hindu was approved. So they're actually going to start using AI to determine whether or not you get a loan. And you're not going to know that that's what they're doing. And the people running it aren't going to know the reason that it's making its decision. Right? So you go to a bank, you apply for a loan. They come back and say, sorry, it's been rejected. You have no idea. They have no idea whether that's because of your credit score, because of past debts that you have, but it's not. It's because you're Christian. But it doesn't say that. It doesn't tell you that anywhere. All you know is you got rejected, and all the bank knows is that the AI said you're not a good bet. But somewhere along the line in the encoding of the AI machine brain, a biased person went in and told it to disadvantaged Christians. Is it any wonder that in the Eighth Front video I did, the self-appointed Jewish overlords of the ADL or any of the other organizations are hyper-obsessed with getting control of AI? Because once they get control of AI, it is a permanent, invisible control system that can systematically and silently achieve anything you want, eliminate anybody you want, crush anybody you want, not immediately necessarily, but give it 10, 20 years of consistently denying loans to one type of person and giving it to another, I wonder what the outcome will be. This is like an AI. We are less than 10 years into the AI revolution, and we are already experiencing massive existential problems with the way it's being rolled out. And it's being rolled out that way deliberately. That's the reason they want to control AI. They want to bias it like that so they can pretend to be innocent as they weaponize their own proclivities and biases against us. So they're programming it to hate white people, but then they're going to say, bah, gee, it's a computer. What do we know? That's a calculator. You can't argue with a calculator, even though inside the calculator is a little note that says, we hate white people, and the computer agrees. It's infuriating. This is all just so annoying. Let's go to one more video here because they're clip 21. There's so much stuff like this, and I just, with everything else going on, I never have time to get to it. But you got to go to Infowars.com. COVID injection linked to higher life-threatening complications during pregnancy. Women who received COVID-19 shots either during or right before pregnancy reported significantly higher rates of life-threatening pregnancy-related hypertensive disorder in unvaccinated women than unvaccinated women, according to a new CDC registry study. The peer-reviewed study, published in Vaccine, analyzed data from more than 16,000 first-time pregnancies. The researchers found that vaccinated women had a 24% higher risk of HPD, that's hypertensive disorder of pregnancy. The women had a higher risk no matter which COVID-19 vaccine they received or when they got it during their pregnancy. Pregnant women were told these genetic products were safe, but it's been shown now that the vaccine is the cause of a massive rise in pregnancy complications and even fetal death or parental death in some cases. Let's go to clip number 21 and then we'll go out to your phone calls. A recent Italian study found that individuals that received at least one dose of COVID-19 are 34% more likely to die of a particular type of cancer. Let's watch.
Well, warm welcome to this talk. Now, there's been concern for some time now from talking to various experts about the increased risk of cancers, probably all types of cancers or many types of cancers after COVID vaccines. Now, of course, we're deprived of data in the United Kingdom between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. We just can't get that information freely. But there has been a study done in Italy. And what this shows is increased incidence of cancers 6 months after COVID vaccinations. Now, let's look at where we got this from. This is from this paper here, Experimental and Clinical Sciences Journal, peer-reviewed, of course, made publicly available. You can download the PDF. The full paper is there. So people that had vaccinated with at least one dose, their chances of getting colorectal cancer, the hazard ratio was 1.34. In other words, 34% more likely to get it. This is at a six-month follow-up. Breast cancer, 54% more likely to get breast cancer in the vaccinated group. Bladder cancer, 62% more likely to get it than the unvaccinated group.
So just so you remember, you know, when you're talking about the Epstein list, when you're talking about, oh, my God, I can't believe how evil these people are, just remember they released a virus on purpose to use your fear of death to inject you with a poison shot that they wanted to fire you from your job for refusing. So I don't know what made you think these people weren't evil, but wake up. But wake up already, folks. They're still telling people who are pregnant to get the shot. They're still doing that. So don't be surprised when they're eating babies. Okay, it's just a little way down the spectrum of evil from where we are now, where we've been for the last 10 years. Let's go to Baker in California now on line 4. Wants to talk about Epstein and a movie called The Informers. And I haven't heard of that. Go ahead, Baker. You're on the air.
Oh, man. Okay, Harrison, you ever heard of it? Dude, you guys have to watch it. Okay, so that episode that Alex did where he went over Eyes Wide Shut and everything, you guys have to do something like that for The Informers. Okay, this is a movie. It's based off short stories, three short stories that all intertwine, written by the same dude that wrote American Psycho and Less Than Zero. Okay, and it's one of those movies, as soon as you watch it, you know it's not an action thriller. It's not about things happening. It's a message that they're trying to tell you. Okay, so it's L.A. socialites. Their parents are producers. Okay, so that's one storyline. That's kind of like the meaning. That's like the surface level setting. But underneath it, there's two other stories. You have a new wave British artist guy. And first scene, he wakes up with a 14-year-old girl. His producer calls him, right? He slips and falls and he's bleeding. And his producer calls him and he says, Lucifer. And then he tells him, he says, okay, he talks about the 14-year-old girl. That same guy, in another scene, he's talking to his producer, some Jewish producer guy, and there's like a underage girl sitting watching TV about the AIDS crisis, and she has braces on, and then they go in a room together, and they both watch him go in, and then they close the doors. Now, this is the part it's such a weird movie. Mickey Rourke, okay, he's driving around in a van, and so, okay, one of the guys that works in the lobby of the studio producer's kids, he meets with his uncle and he opens up a van and there's an underage girl in there. He's like, oh, how old is she? He's like, she's 16, 17. I don't ask anymore. And she's all traumatized. And Mickey Rourke says, oh, well, she's seen some really messed up stuff. So that will relate later. So so what they do is they kidnap a little boy. They get him in there. And he's like, what the hell are you doing, man? What are you doing? He's like, okay, listen, the people I met in West LA, they'll pay $6,000 to $7,000 a pop for a thing like that. Okay, the guy who wants to buy him comes to get the kid, and he goes, you don't know, understand who we are. He's like, Legion. Okay, so you guys should definitely go into that movie because it's like, you're just going to get such a weird vibe from it, dude. And
well, I'll tell you, I'm a big fan of Bret Easton Ellis. I know he's been on with a couple people we've had on. Maybe we could get him on because I think he's sort of friendly to our side of things. But he got famous really early on as a young writer with Less Than Zero, which was basically autobiographical. I mean, a lot of his books are autobiographical. American Psycho is one of them. It's like a trilogy of books, and it's Less Than Zero, American Psycho, and the other one that was turned into a movie. I'm blanking on it right now. But essentially, they're autobiographical, and the one Less Than Zero is about him as a teenager in L.A. and the horrors that went on there and the drug use and the sexual abuse and the pedophilia. And like he describes in that book, again, a autobiographical based on a true story, but pretty much real, like being at a party in LA and them showing like snuff films in one of the rooms. And like you described, it's horrifying. It's like a horrifying description that, it's like the only thing I remember from the books. It was like kind of traumatizing to read it. But yeah, he has experience in the elite circles in LA and New York. And he used those to write Less Than Zero and, American Psycho. And I'm pretty sure he went to Harvard where he wrote, the third book. What is it? Yeah, everybody knows it. It was a famous, it's a famous movie starring Heath Ledger, I think. But anyway, that's like the third of the trilogy. So yeah, he has written about all that sort of stuff before. And interestingly, as I was looking up the movie you're talking about, it was apparently directed by a young director named Brad Baron Renfro. And it says it was the last movie that he directed before his untimely death at the age of 25. So that's interesting. That's kind of a Kubrickian way to go, right? Finish a movie that exposes elite pedophilia only to die shortly after. It's very troubling. But apparently died of at age 25 of heroin and morphine intoxication. So I don't know. But just seeing that the director, it was the last film before dying at 25, that's a little suspicious to me. So we'll look into that. Thank you. But yeah, Brett Easton Ellis definitely has firsthand knowledge of some of the stuff that goes on in these elite circles. So I'm not surprised that that movie reflects that. We'll go to one more call here. We've got Friendly Stug in North Dakota. Am I reading that right? I don't have my glasses on. Is it Stug or Slug? Stug, I think. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, Harrison, you have been on fire today. All three of the shows have been great today. So you've only plugged once today, so I'm going to help you out. I'm looking at my supplement shelf here, and I've got the Ultimate Life Force, I've got the turmeric gummies, I got the Survival Shield X2, I have the Methylene Blue and the Red, I've got the Colostrum Plus, I've got the Beef Tallow. I still take Beyond Tangy Tangerine. All the OG InfoWars listeners know what that is. And my favorite, by far, is the Optimal Human. I stopped taking greens powders, like, I don't know, 5 years ago, because they all taste like your garbage disposal smells. They're disgusting. They don't mix well. You drink it, and then you get these little powder pockets that pop in your mouth, and they taste disgusting. This, I can't wait till the summertime. I'm going to make a big pitcher of this, put some ice in it. It has electrolytes in it, and I'm just going to sip it all day.
It's so good, right? Do you do the lemon juice trick? I add a little lemon juice, and it really is good.
I haven't tried that. I think I will try that because it is – the flavor is hard to describe. It is kind of lemony, though. I think it would go well with lemon.
Well, it's like to me, it reminded me of like a green tea. So I was thinking like, okay, honey or lemon or something that you would put in a green tea.
Right. Yeah, no, it's good. It's my favorite product by far. I just read up on more of the turmeric gummies today. I also got some of the creatine, so I'm going to try that out. Also the electrolyte packets. I was going to get the energy shots. However, I looked at the ingredients, and it has 5-HTP in it. And a disclaimer for your audience, you cannot take 5-HTP in conjunction with methylene blue. It can cause serotonin syndrome. Very dangerous. You can get sweating, nausea, vomiting, heart palpitations, coma, and death. It's very serious.
Yeah, so that's true with a lot of things with methylene blue, and that's why we say like you actually should talk to your doctor, because methylene blue is really powerful. But if you're taking any SSRIs, if you're taking any like Adderall or anything like that, you are not supposed to take methylene blue. It's just that powerful. So, man, thank you so much for supporting us. Thank you for reminding me to plug thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. 52% off site wide right now. Thank you so much for the plug, Friendly Stug. Yeah, that rhymes. Thealexjonesstore.com.
I see through a rose-colored darkly. That means I'm trying to tell you the truth, but I'm not always right just about 98% of the time. And bad guys of every stripe don't want this show on the air. But you're the good guys. You have to decide, hey, this guy's a fighter. This guy stood up for this. This guy has an incredible track record. We want to support him. And then I'm going to sell you something that really works so you love it and you get it again and again. And Bigly, our great sponsor, those at TheAlexJonesStore.com, no matter what happens, InfoWars, we continue on the Alex Jones Network that's been built. So key. Said, Alex, you keep getting it wrong. We don't have 84% reorder on Ultramethylene Blue. We don't have 76% reorder on the supplements on average. You're reading that wrong. That's on total customers. We have a 97% reorder from anybody that orders at thealexjonesstore.com. Well, that's a testament to you guys out there supporting us and how great the products are. Nobody, I mean, a site that has a 20% reorder is seen as successful. That is you being steadfast supporters, and I want to thank you. So we're running the biggest sale of the year right now, over 50% off on ultramethylene blue, on the bovine colostrum, on the new methylene red that's proprietary to us, on the Shilajit Complex, the IRC boss, atomic defense, and more. But it's only run until next Monday. Got 6 days to take action. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Takes money to fight a war. We're fighting a war. Plus, the products are great. So please, get yours now. Over 50% off, but it's an alert. Only a few days left. Thank you so much.